Morning,
Morning,
I've seen you.
sir. Morning, sir.
I've seen you wearing like me. I appreciate.
As always, thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. You are all welcome to this meeting, which should be business-like today, because it's bumper to bumper in terms of items. We have about 5 items here. And so let me go straight to the issues. Apologies, I only have one apology that has conformed with the requirements. That is an apology from Honorable Luketa Mabala Usthole. He is attending another committee on tourism. That's the only apology I have. Am I correct, Valerie?
That is correct, Chair.
If that is correct, let me then welcome the department, led, of course, by the Honorable Minister, who is going to lead the presentation on the aircraft accident by civil aviation. I have just indicated and requested to the Minister that I would love that go straight to the issues. 20 to 25 minutes presentation will do. Let me at this point hand over to the Minister and the department. Over to you, Jola.
Chair, the Portfolio Committee and members of the Portfolio Committee. I'm with our team here. I don't know whether the Deputy Minister is in, and the Acting Director General, Mr. Mthunzi Madia. We are presenting a chair before the department's performance in the second and third term quarter financial year.
Recording in progress.
And as well as the report, and in terms of the accident report, I wouldn't want to waste any time. I will call upon the team to led by the acting DDG, or will be presented by the executive accident and incident investigation, Mr. Albert Murudi, Puti Murudi, to come forward with the presentation. With your permission, Chairperson, thank you.
Thank you very much, Jola. Puti, Lime Chichi, over to you. Not relaxed. I can see the aeroplane put. Yes, the presentation I can see. The voice is lucky. Unmute yourself, put.
Thank you, Chair. I thought I was unmuted. My apologies for that. Good morning, Honorable Minister, and the members of Parliament present today, and all the colleagues. I won't waste your time, Chair, as I heard that we have a short time, and I'll go directly into the presentation. And as you pay your request, I'll go directly into the substance of the presentation. I saw it fit to start with the process of this investigation, which won't take me long. And then I'll go into the findings of the report, the recommendations, and the cause. or the proposed cause. Let me start with the investigation. The objective or the sole objective of the investigation of an accident or incident shall be the prevention of accident and incident. It is not the purpose of this activity to apportion blame or liability. That is enshrined in ICAO Annexation Standard 3.1. And then in terms of ICAO Annexation Standard 5.1, South Africa did institute an investigation following the accident on ZS, on aircraft ZS cars, which belongs to the civil aviation. And 5.1 states, the state of occurrence shall institute and investigate an investigation into the circumstances of the accident and be responsible for the conduct of the investigation. But it may delegate the whole or any part of the conduct of such an investigation to another state or a regional accident and incident investigation organization by mutual arrangement and consent. In any event, the state of occurrence shall use every means to facilitate the investigation. In terms of Standard 4.1, South Africa, following the accident, issued a notification, and that notification was sent to all states prescribed in Standard 4.1. The state are as follows: the state of registry, which is South Africa; the state of operator, which is also South Africa; the state of design, which is the United States. They designed the airframe of the aircraft, and Canada, which designed the engine; the state of manufacture, which is the US and Canada. In terms of this, that we did this in 2 days after the accident itself. And then following that, 30 days later, we issued a preliminary report, which was issued 30 days before, and that was sent to the state of registry, which is South Africa; state of operator, South Africa; state of design, US and Canada; state of manufacture, US and Canada; and state that provided relevant information or significant facility or experts, which is France. They did download the FDR for this investigation. That's how they participated. The International Civil Aviation Organization itself, to ensure that they include this in their database, this accident into their database. The preliminary report was issued by Accident and Incident Investigation Division within 30 days, as I've said, in terms of annexating. The preliminary report was issued with recommendations for the minister to delegate the investigation to another state due to the requests from victims' families and the pressures from the industry. During the preparation to delegate, the world was hit by COVID-19 pandemic, which lasted for the most of 2020. And the delegated state, Ethiopia, could not travel to South Africa. That resulted on having to issue an interim statement on the 23rd of January 2021, which was the first 12-month anniversary of the accident in terms of Standard 6.6 of ICAO Annexation. The interim report looks exactly like what you see on your screen to the right. 6.6 states that if the report cannot be made publicly available within 12 months, the state conducting the investigation shall make an interim statement publicly available on each anniversary of the occurrence, detailing the progress of the investigation. This was done as the Ethiopians were not in South Africa at that time and their investigation hasn't started. So the investigation was still a purview of Accident Investigation Division in South Africa. Therefore, we had to issue the interim statement. The AIB arrived in South Africa on the 24th of January, and on the 25th of January 2021, AID and AIB entered into an operational agreement on the conduct of the accident ZS car in line with ICAO Annexation Standard 5.1. The AIB investigation was initiated on 25th January 2021 by a reviewing of documentation, conducting interview with SACAR, the AID itself, the flight inspections unit, which is the operator, and the AMO, which is the aircraft maintenance organization, and the victim's families as well. And they also inspected the wreckage. The team concluded the RSA phase of the investigation on 5th of February 2021, and they left South Africa on 6th of February 2021. Regrettably, the lead investigator could not leave as he had contracted COVID-19, and he only left South Africa on the 26th of February after being cleared of COVID. The investigation continued with the drafting of the draft final report in terms of ICAO SAP. The operational agreement looks exactly that. That's the first page of the operational agreement entered into between AIID and AAIB of Ethiopia. As I said, 5.1 states that the state of occurrence shall institute an investigation into the circumstances of the accident and be responsible for the conduct of the investigation, but it may delegate the whole or any part of the conduct of such investigation to another state or regional accident and incident investigation organization by mutual arrangement and consent. In any event, the state of occurrence shall ensure every means to facilitate the investigation. South Africa therefore entered into this agreement, and with the AAIB or Ethiopia, they agreed on the arrangement to investigate, and they had mutual consent in terms of 5.1. The draft final report was issued by Ethiopian AAIB in terms of standard 6.3 of ICAO Annex 13. And the draft final report was sent to the following state: the state that instituted the investigation, which is South Africa; the state of registry, South Africa; the state of operator, South Africa; the state of design, USA and Canada; the state of manufacture, USA and Canada; and the state that participated, which is France, as I alluded to. So the draft final report was submitted to all those states, and they were given, in terms of standard 6.3 of ICAO, they were given 60 days to respond to that, to the report, or to comment on the report itself, on a draft final report. And that 60 days was extended up to at the end of October 2021. And all states did submit their comments, including South Africa, submitted their comments to the AAIB. The final report was issued on the accident in November 2021. It was issued to South Africa. The final report was issued in terms of standard 6.4 of ICAO Annex 13, and it was sent to the state that instituted the investigation, which is South Africa; state of registry, South Africa; state of operator, South Africa; state of design, USA and Canada; and state of manufacture; the state that participated in the investigation, which is France; and state having suffered fatalities, which is South Africa; and state which provided relevant information and expertise, which is USA, Canada, and France. Excuse me. Standard 6.5 states that in the interest of accident prevention, the state conducting the investigation of an accident or incident shall make the final report publicly available as soon as possible, and if possible, within 12 months, as I stated. Now, the recourse that South Africa has following the issuance of the final report, in terms of the ICAO Annex 13 Standard 5.13, reopening of the investigation, it states, if after the investigation has been closed, new and significant evidence becomes available, the state which conducted the investigation shall reopen it. However, when the state which conducted the investigation did not institute it, the state shall first obtain consent from the state which instituted the investigation. You will remember that South Africa instituted the investigation and it delegated it to Ethiopia, which is the state that conducted the investigation. So if, as the investigation has been closed, if new and significant evidence becomes available, Ethiopia will review that, and then if they agree that that information is new and significant, they will then write a letter to South Africa, which is a state that instituted the investigation, requesting their consent to reopen the investigation. On receipt of the consent from South Africa, that investigation will be reopened. And now I will get into the findings of the report. The findings of the report into this accident, finding one states that the PIC had been initially issued with the airline pilot transport on 20 December 2011. This has, his last skills test was carried out on 24 January 2019, and his license was issued on the same day with an expire of 29 February 2020. He was also issued with a class one aviation medical certificate. What this means is that for a pilot to have a license, they'll have to undergo training or recurrency training. And on top of that, they'll have to obtain a medical certificate which confirms their fitness for that operation. And when having that, they'll be issued then with a license. In this case, the captain was issued with a transport pilot license, which is the highest license which can be obtained in aviation as a pilot. And the first officer was issued with a commercial pilot license, which was issued on the 15th of March 2019 with an expiry date on 31 March 2020. And her MetLas 1 medical certificate was issued on the 26th September 2019 with an expiry date of 31 July 2020. The air traffic controller had been initially issued with the aerodrome control air traffic services license on 28 February 2003. His last skills test was carried out on 14 August 2019, and his license was issued on the same day with an expiry date of 13 June 2020. The ATC was issued with a class 3 aviation medical certificate on 19 February with an expiry date of 28 February 2020. The aerodrome controller conducted the last proficiency check on aerodrome control license for FAGG, which is George Airport, and FAOR, which is OR Tambo International, on 14 August 2019 and 8 July 2019, respectively. The aerodrome approach controller had been initially issued with the aerodrome control air traffic services license on 24 August 2007. His last skills test was carried out on 5 December 2019, and his license was issued on the same day with an expiry date of 4 December 2019. Now, in terms of what I just alluded to, in terms of the personnel that was involved in the operation of this aircraft, including the ATC and the approach controller and the aerodrome controller, all of them, their licenses were in order in terms of what is stated here. the aerodrome approach controller was issued with a class 3 aviation medical certificate on 12 March 2019 with an expiry date of 31 March 2023. The aerodrome approach controller was issued with a level 6 language proficiency certificate on 20 August 2007. The aerodrome approach controller also did proficiency on approach control surveillance for George Airport on 26 April 2019 and had an expiry date of 25 April 2020. The valid pilot proficiency check in respect is represented by the certificate from Flight Safety Textron Aviation Training. PIC proficiency check was expiring on 7 May 2020. The proficiency check for annual attitude recovery simulator exercise was not found in the PIC grade slip. What this means is that for the simulator exercises, if you had 10, for instance, 10 exercises that you have to do in the simulator, there was no indication out of 10 how much did you score successfully for the proficiency check to be issued in terms of this. Hence, there was a finding in terms of the pilot's proficiency check. The aircraft was issued with the initial certificate of airworthiness on 26 October 1986. The last certificate of airworthiness was reissued on 29 October 2019 with an expiry date of 30 October 2020. The accident aircraft ZS car was not maintained in accordance with regulation part 43028, whereby the FDR annual inspection was not conducted. Therefore, at the time of the accident, the certificate of airworthiness was rendered invalid. Excuse me. Any aircraft which is not maintained in terms of regulation part 43, that on its own renders the certificate of airworthiness invalid in terms of the requirements of part 43 of the civil aviation regulation. The aircraft has been issued with a certificate of release to service on 31 May 2019 with an expiry date of 31 May 2020 or 10,227.7 FM hours, whichever occurs first. The aircraft was operated under CAR Part 135 and 171 was conducting an ILS calibration at the time of the accident. How do we even know this? The operator had been issued with an air operator certificate on the 1st of March 2019 with an expiry date on of 28 February 2020. The South African AID and FIU are structured under the SACAR. That means that there are requirements that the AAID should be independent of organizations such as the Civil Aviation Authority, and also as the FIU is the service provider and which is regulated by the South African Civil Aviation Authority, it should not reside within SACAR. The PIC was considered as chief pilot and manager operations. This only says that the captain or the pilot in command was a chief pilot for the organization and also the manager operation of this aircraft, this operation. And on 17, it says the PIC was designated by FIU in case of line checks. The PIC was also a line check pilot, which means that the training for new pilots that are joining the FIU was conducted by the PIC, who was signing them out as proficient to do flight calibration. The aircraft experienced three incidents in the past 12 months, namely, on 2 March 2019, the engine number one throttle did not respond due to damaged throttle cable. In the month of November 2019,
Murudi,
yes,
are you rounding up?
Yes, I can just summarize the findings in three ways and then move to the recommendations, if the chair allows.
Yes, because your 20 minutes is over. Please do so.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. The findings are mainly on training not indicated in the scoring, and the certificate of airworthiness being invalid, and the aircraft being unairworthy. That's what the findings are all saying. In terms of the problem cause of the accident was attributed to the crew loss of control of the aircraft, which resulted in significant loss of altitude. As they attempted to recover, they collided with the mountain. According to the source report, there was significant clouds covering below 1,500 feet above ground level at the time of the accident, as observed by the METAS. Mountaintops were obscured as seen on the webcam. The aircraft route, which is 70 nautical miles arc, passes over the obscured mountains. From the limited FDR reading, the aircraft attitude drastically changed into an unusual attitude when approaching the mountain area. This indicates that most probably the pilot has entered into an unusual attitude during transition from VFR to IFR flight without preparation. The accident flight plan was VFR. The contributor factors, talking to the presence of low clouds in the area of operation, the capacity of the crew to recover from an unusual attitude, the overbank or steep dive angle which the aircraft entered into and which was the pilot was unable to recover from, lack of upside prevention recovery as well. In terms of the safety recommendation, the first AIP safety recommendation says that SACA considered installing the CVR on the aircraft flying for calibration purposes and other flights as well. The FDR recording capacity was limited by the aircraft system and was not fit to record all required parameters for the accident. The second one states that the SACA to ensure that operation operators install the FDR that records all mandatory parameters as required by the law. The third one states that the South African AAT should be an independent from the state aviation authorities and other entities that could interfere with the conduct and objectivity of the investigation and conflict of interest. The FE operational manual instructs the crew to fly IFR for all operations. The fourth one, I think is the last one, the AAT recommends that the SACA conducts an in-depth review of FIU operations to ensure that the operator complies with the regulator requirements. Crew should be proficient in unusual attitude recovery according to the regulation. Thank you, Chair. That was the last slide.
Tate Murudu. Murudi, Papa Murudu.
Murudi.
Oh, Murudi.
Yes,
thank you very much. Let me check members who wants to have a bite on the presentation. Honorable Chris Hunsinger, followed by Honorable Lawrence McDonald, and number last and number three. Oh, followed by Honorable Ulisa Wagwamangu, and number last will be Honorable Peter May. The last will be Honorable Makhosini Shabang. In that order, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm rather disappointed in the rushed manner. I would have preferred that Mr. Is it Marudi? Have the opportunity to explain in full length all the findings, but we also had the document prior to this meeting, and therefore I studied the report with great interest. Chairperson, we got as far as to paragraph 11, which indicated that this at the time this aircraft had an invalid certificate of airworthiness. Then also we got as far as paragraph 18, where three incidents were recorded and shared with the committee around a damaged throttle cable, which was on the 2nd of March 2019, and then two other incidents of oil smell as well as smoke in the cockpit around November 2019, and that there was a decision then to change engine one. I would like to know whether engine one was in fact changed, and that is basically how far we could get. Chairperson, it is quite clear that that the aircraft did not have any approval for flight operations at the time of this very sad incident and crash. Therefore, it appears that this aircraft was operating recklessly for at least 10 months. If we could get confirmation by Mr. Marudi that I'm understanding this correctly. Secondly, the aircraft was not airworthy, it seems, from the report. It was not airworthy at the time of the crash. And question is, if not, why did the civil aviation continue to operate with the aircraft, knowing that it was not airworthy? And I would also like to ask this question to Minister Fikile Mbalula. Minister, under the same conditions of not being airworthy, other aeroplanes and other airlines were grounded, such as SAA at the time, ComAir, and also Air Link. We have evidence of the grounding of aeroplanes under the same condition. However, the civil aviation aircraft would be allowed to continue operation. I would like the minister to react on that in terms of fairness and in terms of the general conduct of rules, what applies to the one and not to the other. Furthermore, Chairperson, the serious incidents that was mentioned 2 months, as late as 2 months before the incident, of something as serious as smoke in the cockpit. What was the reaction from the technicians and civil aviation around this, and what were the formal reports that was put into the system of civil aviation's procedure and processes when the smoke was detected? I do understand that the report was released by the Ethiopian investigators on the 18th of November 2021, and that it was delivered to someone, but it was only released officially in South Africa on the 23rd of January 2022. So I would like to get Mr. Marudi's indication of on whose desk was the report lying for this period of time. On whose desk was it pending release? Why the delay? Why once released from the Ethiopian investigators on the 18th of November 2021, why wasn't it released immediately? What was the reason for this then to pend until the 23rd of January 2022? It was very disturbing that once released on the 23rd of January 2022, page 56, if I recall correctly, paragraphs 19 to 30 were simply missing. So who was responsible for not releasing the full report? What was the reason for extracting this? And is this permissible in terms of international report standards, procedures, processes to simply extract particular paragraphs for whatever particular reason? I would also like to know whether once the report was handed over on the 18th of November 2021 to civil aviation, whether any communication around the content transpired between civil aviation and the Ethiopian inspectors? Was there any communication around this or conversation around the content, and anything in addition to that which Mr. Marudi would want to bring under the impression of this committee? Chairperson, there's a very important parallel document which I think this portfolio committee needs to acknowledge, and that is the document as known as a ministerial order, which addresses the Civil Aviation Act 2009, Section 100, which was released on the 26th of May 2015. And in this ministerial order, the minister then expressed a desire and a relationship of in operational terms, where aviation safety investigations, in terms of functionality, the head of aircraft investigation would report directly to the minister. So there's this interest from the minister, from government, then to have a direct link with the head of aircraft investigations. And after that incident and around the incident, we learned that the head of civil aviation's investigations, he left, or his contract wasn't renewed. However, there was no intervention despite this ministerial order of a direct relationship. There was no intervention or no interest from the minister to inquire around the not renewal of the contract of aircraft investigations. I find that disturbing. And I would recommend, Chairperson, that we as the Portfolio Committee summons this late or last head of aircraft investigations to get his or her version of this particular incident, but then also the circumstances leading to this incident. I think there's a lot more information which we should should take notice of. Chairperson, and then there is parallel to all of this, there is the International Civil Aviation Organization, which requires independence of an investigations body to the mother body. You will also recall, Chairperson, that we looked at the Civil Aviation Act and there were amendments to it, and we made useful input to the amendments. It was mainly around the independence, preferential position in terms of getting paid that we addressed. But when it got to the debate around whether one should have this independent investigations body separate from the mother body, it was argued that the financial condition isn't such that we can afford this. Chairperson, I think it would really compromise Parliament. It would be irresponsible of us from Parliament not to look at this again. There's a parallel time frame to this. The bill was introduced to Parliament on the 14th of November 2018. It lapsed then. It was revived in the sixth term. In fact, on the 29th of October 2019, we had public hearings. It was processed. We as the Portfolio Committee found settlement and approved in March 2021, and I'm just mentioning these dates to show the overlap with the incident. And we had good faith, Chairperson, that everything would be in order, that this would be a crash, a act of error and a crash. Subsequently, and now with this report, a new impression is developed. The findings point to the crash not being due to error, but due to negligence, disregard, and carelessness. And therefore, Chairperson, I'm convinced that we should look at the Civil Aviation Act again. There is no other way but for us to take the decision and push through with the Independent Investigations Board being a separate body from the South African Civil Aviation. It cannot be accepted in terms of international standards, but particularly because of this clear demonstration of negligence, disregard, and carelessness. It would compromise Parliament, and it would put us in a very awkward position, that of being irresponsible if we do not recall that piece of legislation. I therefore recommend, Chairperson, that we explore opportunities to view that particular Civil Aviation Amendment Act again, or bill again. It is pending assentment at this stage, and to explore opportunities to have a look at that piece of legislation again. We cannot approve that piece of legislation in the current form, especially after we've now been exposed to the findings, which is shocking and highly disappointing. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Honourable MacDonald.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Minister, and all the other members of the Portfolio Committee, guests. Chairperson, you know, I love aviation, and I'm quite proficient in the aviation industry. When you watch an air crash investigation on Discovery, an accident starts long before the accident happens. And in this case, the accident started on the 8th of the 11th, 2019, when the aircraft had a couple of incidents with its engines with oil smoke in the cockpit. And then the aircraft was grounded for nearly a couple of months. It was for a month on the ground, and more, a little bit more than a month, 2 months, before it was flying again. And Chairperson, that's where it starts. The Citation S550, that specific plane was near, that was 30 odd years old, end of life, it's getting to the point, it's a very dangerous aeroplane. It has a lot of quirks. It's definitely not a type of plane that you want to use on a regular basis for calibration. But it is what it is, Chairperson. It was an accident. It happened. It was if it was not for the accident, we would never have known that the pilot never had unusual attitude recovery experience on his license. We would not have known a lot of things. I don't know what's in the rest of the reports, because we don't have the full report, but did the Ethiopian authorities, when they did the Ethiopian investigators, did they take fuel samples of the filters of the engines and have it tested in a laboratory to check if there was any problem with the fuel? So we can, we're trying to stop other accidents of happening. The reason for accident reports is so that you can look at a report and look and find what happened. Chairperson, on that specific day, the clouds were very low, and there's a chart, a Jefferson chart. You can go and get the chart, the charts for George. It's chart number 10-1R. And it shows clearly that in the sectors that the pilots were flying, the minimum safe altitude was 3,500 feet and then 5,500 feet, with a cloud base at 1,500 feet. Unfortunately, there was no cockpit voice recorder, but my years of experience in this tells me that, number one, there was a spatial awareness. The pilot in flying, and which I think was the second officer, because she was the one that got clearance off the ground when she last spoke with Tower. She was flying the plane. She became, she lost spatial awareness, and the plane went into an unusual attitude. From there on, the plane was doomed. You don't know where you are. You're in the middle of a cloud, and you have the plane is in an unusual attitude. You are dead. There's no other way about it, Chairperson. And that specific plane, the Cessna S550, you can Google it, Chairperson. Those planes, when they get an unusual attitude, the engine runs without oil, the engine fails, you are dead. There's no other way about it. Chairperson, then, I wanted to know, did they check, under the ICAO Act, the minute that there's an accident, was the blood alcohol content checked of the ATC, the ground controller and the tower controller, because that is the law. We either can't find that anywhere in the report. The clouds were 1,500 feet, and the only thing that I agree about in this report is that the pilots should have been flying under IFR conditions or not VFR conditions. Under no circumstances can you fly a plane like that in that type of weather in VFR conditions. Chairperson, I'm very distraught that we don't have the full report and that pages have been removed from the accident report, and then afterwards, after it's been released to the media and after everything is said and done and everybody knows about the report, it's been tabled to Parliament. It should have worked the other way around, Chairperson. Just my suggestion, Chairperson, if something like this, like an accident happens or there's something that the department did there, shouldn't they bring it to us and let we discuss it and see how these things what happened before we release it to everybody, so that we at least have a... Now we must sift between the what has been said in the media and News 24 and what is said by this person and what is said by this person, and then we have to compile it, and then we have to look at six months later, look at the report from the department. It would have been better if they brought the report to us. We look at the report, we make recommendations, and the report is released to the media. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, Minister, Deputy Minister, and colleagues. Thank you for the presentation, Minister. Two things for me that seemingly are missing in the presentation. What is the purpose? You are bringing it to us, not the purpose of an investigation. What is the purpose of bringing it to us? And secondly, what is it that you require from us as a portfolio committee? Do you want us to note it? Do you want us to further do something about it? Those two things to me are very critical, because they then begin to shape our response to it, so that we don't venture into areas that you might not be. Maybe you just want us to note it, that it was done, it has been reported. We can say, thank you, we noted the report. That's the first thing. And I think in all similar reports coming to be the portfolio, we must be clear what decision, if any, or processing do we require from the portfolio committee. Secondly, Chair, I think my colleagues who have spoken before have went at length with knowledge on the findings of that report, which I will not repeat. My last request and question directly once more, what actions on the findings have been taken so far? Thank you so much, Mangaet Sam. Ndiyabule.
Ndiyabule, Lachola.
Thank you.
Ujambas, hi, John.
Oh, Ujambas. Nago, Gamfein. Baba was Eastern Cape.
Thank you, Chairperson. Colleagues, Minister, flying remains a very safe way to travel. You would expect a body like the South African Civil Aviation Authority to play things by the book, but that wasn't the case in January 2020 when the calibration plane crashed near George. A report which looked into the crash revealed a number of damning findings, included that the aircraft's flight data recorder had not received its annual inspection. In short, a lack of maintenance was the cause of the accident. What about accountability, and what measures will be taken in future to prevent accidents? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable May. Let me just check, that was the last hand?
Uh-uh.
Oh.
Chairperson.
whatever fighter here at all, and I'm man. Okay.
Ungivalela ngaphandle. Chairperson, thank you very much. Let me also interrogate the report, but I must indicate that the report should be the true reflection of what transpired on that day. And with this one, really is a fallacy. My first question would be then, was the aircraft worthiness at the time of the accident? And if it was not worth airworthiness, why did the CAA operate the aircraft? Was the CAA warned about the status of the aircraft that they need to check the status of the aircraft before disaster happens? And if so, what did the CAA do with the warning from the former head of aircraft accident, Mr. Peter Mashaba? There was a serious incident that occurred 2 months before the fatal crash, and the final report indicates non-compliance to the civil aviation regulations, something that is also highlighted in the final report of the fatal crash. Why was the CAA not complying to its own regulations? The final report of ZS car fatal report also recommended that the aircraft accident investigation be separated from the CAA. So when will this be done to give credibility to aircraft accident investigation? Then the Ethiopian issued the report in November 2021. Why was the report not released in November 2021 and only released in January 2022? Finally, who was the accountable manager for the operation of the aircraft? And was she or he held accountable for failing to comply with the civil aviation regulations? Chair, this accident happened because of negligence, and therefore I would like to align myself with the latter speakers or colleagues that this report not be accepted, but notice be given to it and be rejected. Thank you very much. Okay.
Thank you very much. I'm not sleeping, I'm here. Back to you, Minister, and the team.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to ask the Deputy Minister. First, let me ask Ndate Albert Puti to come first, and then it'll be followed by the Deputy Minister, and then I'll close it off, because in our sharing of task, Deputy Minister deals with this, but the responsibility lies with me legally in terms of the issues members have raised here, which I will gladly would like to respond to. If you give me that permission, Chair, I'll ask them to come in that order.
Thank you very much, Jola. You can go ahead.
Okay. Ntate Puti.
Thank you, Minister. I think I'll deal with the questions which are talking to the aircraft in terms of technicality, but the others I'll leave for some of the colleagues to answer. The first question was the engine changed? That came from Honorable Chris, I forget the surname, but it came from him. Yes, the engine was changed. It's a class one component of the aircraft, which requires that when it's damaged, it should be changed in terms of the maintenance manual of the aircraft. And yes, it was changed. in terms of why was the aircraft not grounded? I don't have an answer for that. I'm not privy to what happens within the regulator. But during the changing of the engine, during that period, the aircraft was grounded for some time. And then the next question was, the findings pointing to negligence. I see that as a statement which was made by the honorable member, that the findings were pointing out to negligence and not error. Remember, in terms of accident investigation, we try not to point out to any liability, pointing out to anyone. If the report pointed to such negligence, it would have been not in line with the principles of ICAO Annex 13. However, what I'm not going to say is that there was no negligence. I'm not in any way trying to say that there were errors and there was some negligence, but I don't want to be portal to that because I'm an investigator and we are required not to point to things that will point at negligence or liability in our reporting. The accident started on 8th of the 11th, and this was coming from the Honorable Lawrence. I'm in agreement with the statement that the accident usually happens way, way before the catastrophic scene that we have seen, we have seen happens. I'm in agreement with you. There will be telltales that talks to that, including those which we did allude to in the incident report that we released 2 months before the fatal crash. So I am in agreement with you that it started way before then. Spatial disorientation is not part of what is in the report, but the report infers to that when they talk to in their findings, moving from visual flight rules into instrument flight rules without preparing for that. That will suggest spatial disorientation. And the second one is, did they check the blood alcohol level of the air traffic control? I didn't see that in the report, and as AID, we have done the initial investigation up to the release of the preliminary report, and subsequent to that, the release of the interim statement after 12 months following the COVID restrictions. In terms of the blood alcohol level of the ATC, we haven't done that, and I'm not aware if the AAIB had done that as well. And then there was a question in terms of the pages. I think it's a number of pages that it was stated that they were removed. It was one page, and it was the mistake made when the report was sent to South Africa by AAIB. And after we were alerted to that, we alerted the AIB, who corrected that mistake, and then they resent the report. And following that, we published the correct report. And then in terms of the questions from Honorable Mangu, those I'll leave for my colleagues to respond to. In terms of the question from Honorable May, what about accountability and what measures to be taken in future? That also I'll leave for the colleagues, my colleagues to respond to that. And then in terms of the questions from Honorable Makosini, was the aircraft airworthy? In terms of the report, it tells us it was not, and specifically states that the FDR was not maintained in accordance to part 43. And in some cases, it refers to part 135 requirements. That then suggests that the aircraft was not airworthy. And the second part, in terms of stating that the certificate of airworthiness was invalid. In terms of the part 21, which is the issuance of a certificate of airworthiness, part 21 requires that when a class one component with the engine was, when it fails, that automatically invalidates the certificate of release to service, which in turn invalidates the certificate of airworthiness. And to revalidate the certificate of airworthiness, one needs to operate or to verify that following the requirements of Part 43, which requires that the Director of Civil Aviation should appoint an inspector who will verify if the repairs were done in accordance with the maintenance requirement and the aircraft is airworthy at the time. Following that inspection, the aircraft will then be signed off as airworthy. And there was no evidence that then suggested that that process was done. Therefore, the aircraft was not airworthy. If not, what did they operate? Why did the operator operate the aircraft? I cannot talk on their behalf. I wouldn't know why that was done. Was the SACA warned about the possible accident? In terms of the leaked WhatsApp communication of the Civil Aviation Executive Committee, we saw that the, my predecessor, the previous executive, did send a WhatsApp note advising the CAA executive to look at the airworthiness status of this aircraft. And I'm not sure if that was heeded to honorable member. I'm not sure if that was heeded to, but the warning, yes, was sent in terms of those leaked communication. How, if they are authentic, I do not know if they are authentic or not, because I haven't asked anyone about those, because I understand that there is a pending case on that. Why was the CAA not complying with its own regulation? That as well, it would be something which only the CAA can answer. When will AID be independent? That I think my colleagues will talk to. Why was the report not released in November? Also that my colleagues will talk to. Who was the accountable manager? The accountable manager for the operator was Ms. Poppy Koza, who was responsible for the for that operation at the time of the accident. So I think I've covered the questions that I can respond to, Minister. That's where I'll end.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Thank you, Minister. Back to you.
DM.
No, thank you very much, Minister, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I just want to bring in just one or two issues into the discussion. There were three reports, Chair, that were written about this incident and accident. One, it was the report by the AIID following its preliminary investigation. And that report did not have any adverse findings. The second report was the draft report by the Ethiopians following their investigation, having come physically to South Africa and did the investigation and wrote a draft report that was sent to South Africa for comments by all that had interest in the accident as it was outlined in the presentation. That report did not have really much adverse findings. And then everybody responded. There came the final report with completely new findings that we are dealing with today, which I think maybe it's missing in the presentation. And under normal circumstances, you would allow people that are affected to respond and give evidence as to whether your findings are correct. And that is why the report is sent to the people that are affected. It would be SACA, it will be US, Canada, and so on. But also those that were maintaining, appointed by SACA to maintain the aircraft. And that then did not happen. So we have a report with completely new findings that those that were affected were not given the opportunity to respond to. That is the dilemma with the report, probably hence SACA appealing this report. Because as far as I want to believe they are concerned, there might be evidence, there might be things that they say, but they are not like this. I will also invite members, if possible, to download an article that is written by a Mr. Charlie Marais, who is a pilot, on this one accident and the report. He feels that the report, he says, if I read it, he says, I have seen such a poor accident investigation in format, argument, formulation, findings and recommendations. And then he goes on to give his story. He is an experienced pilot in every boat. But also I will invite members to also download another article by Mr. Mark D. Young. And these people, both of them, are not friends to aviation, CAA at all. But they are making objective observations about the report. I'm just saying that to say there are three reports. Two didn't have adverse findings. The last one, which is final report, had these adverse findings without giving, of course, those, as it is supposed to be the case in terms of ICAO, were not given the opportunity to respond, hence the appeal. Thank you very much.
Minister?
I see you just left the chair, maybe it's a connection issue. Just as the DM finished, maybe he will come back if maybe you give him a moment.
Chair, I forwarded an apology to you from the minister that asked to leave at 10 o'clock. I forwarded to your email at around 10 past 9.
Okay. Uh, Thank you, Valerie. It's I think let's
Chair, the minister is coming back into the waiting room. I'm admitting him now back.
Okay. Admit the minister back, Valerie.
Yeah, I'm back with the bank.
Okay, minister, you can go ahead.
I was affected, honorable members, by load shedding, so sorry, please. I got that. Chair, thank you for the input from honorable members. First, let me start with honorable Hansinger. I've noted the point raised by honorable Hansinger. It is indeed correct that all aircraft must be airworthy. However, I cannot speak to the merits of the matter as the minister at this stage, considering there is an appeal process underway. Our civil aviation regulations make provisions for an appeal process should any interested person feel aggrieved by the findings of an aircraft accident investigation. Such appeal must be lodged within 60 days after publication of the final report. In this instance, I as the minister, I'm the appeal authority, and I'm obligated to adjudicate the appeal on the basis of the documents submitted or order the appellant and the executive responsible for accident investigation to appeal before me. We are currently, Honorable Hansinger, within 60 days window period, which lapses on the 24th of March, 2022. Once the appeal process has been exhausted, we will then move with speed to attend to each of the findings. So there's nothing like they are holy cows, nothing will be done. The procedure. You know that we are a litigation-prone society. People have got rights. And we received the report in November 2021. It was important that we familiarize ourselves with the report and ensure that due process was adequately followed. The standard gives a maximum period of 12 months for the public release of the report, and we duly complied. We duly complied with this requirement by releasing the report on the 23rd of January, 2022. The Civil Aviation Amendment Bill you are talking to, which was passed by the National Assembly and currently before the NCOP, establishes the Aviation Safety Investigation Board, ASIB, as an independent entity responsible for aircraft accident and as well as incident investigation. The process of establishing the ASIP will commence upon proclamation of the Civil Aviation Amendment Bill. So let's process that process very fast. It is important for us in this instance. The renewal of employment contracts of employees is not a matter that ordinarily falls within the purview of the minister. The AIID executive reports to the minister to ensure independence and objectivity of the work carried. Any other administrative or employment matters are still with SACA. There is sufficient legal recourse in terms of the country's labor laws for any employee who is aggrieved if they believe the termination of their contract was an unfair labor practice. So I wish to leave it there. The matter that was raised about the executive who resigned or was dismissed or had a fallout with SACA. Honorable McDonald, the findings of the report will receive our topmost attention once we have exhausted the appeal process. We have a duty to ensure that the root causes of this accident are addressed. To obviate a repeat, it is for this very reason that we appointed an independent authority to conduct this investigation. After I met with the families and engaged with them, they raised their concerns. I took this route right from the inception. We have noted the concern raised by Honorable McDonald that the report should have been presented to Parliament before release to the media. We humbly submit to your request, sir, that in future, even though there is no golden rule that says we should have started there or this way, we will do that. It's not a train smash. Honorable Manu, the purpose of tabling the report for the portfolio committee is to note the report. You are correct to answer the question. What do we want the portfolio committee to note the report and the recommendations there too. Going forward, as part of the oversight responsibility of the portfolio committee, will provide updates on the implementation of the recommendations and other actions. The actions will only unfold in our purview once the appeal process has actually been adopted. Honorable May will pronounce on the actions taken to prevent a recurrence and other actions once the appeal has been exhausted. Honorable Makosini, the actions the SACA has taken to address prior warning is a matter that will be exhausted as part of the appeal process and actioning of the recommendation of the report. The 60 days appeal window expire on the 24th, like I said, March 2022. I've addressed Honorable Makosini the reasons why the report was released in January 2022. I account to you, so I need to bring these things to you. And then what decisions you take about the way forward, it is completely independent of me, but I have accounted. And I'm giving you the way forward, which you are not bound to follow, but from a legal point of view, and the way forward, this is how I'm processing these particular matters. And I know that there are motives, but I seek to really contain that and deal with the issues, because the merit, once I venture into that, it will jeopardize the entire process. So I can't do that. So thank you very much, Slav. Thank you for your time and giving us an opportunity.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. Thank you. Honorable members, I hear you to be saying we note this report with the concerns that we have raised. The report is still continuing, as we have heard, that there is an appeal on this report. We should keep an eye on this process and learn from it. If there's something that we can help change, we'll engage and see how to take that process. But for now, let me thank the minister and the team. I want to close this matter, and I don't know what the two hands are for, but let me give the two hands. Honorable Unsing and Mabena.
Thank you, Chairperson. I really appreciate the opportunity. Chairperson, we've had particular responses. We've had responses from the Minister. We've had responses from the Deputy Minister. We've had responses from Mr. Marudi. And I still seek alignment on many of these responses, given the questions that were asked. I think we should extend our responsibility in terms of oversight by summoning the previous head of investigations, aircraft investigations. It would be to this committee's benefit, understanding and insight to get the input from, I think it's Mr. Mashaba, that's been the previous head of aircraft investigations. I think it will be of benefit to the insight, understanding and to the content, since it would give a perspective either in addition or contrary to what we've heard. And I think it would add to our role as oversight body to really get an understanding. It is also concerning to hear that there were three reports, as mentioned by the Deputy Minister, and that those three reports would in a way be regarded as equal. So also the status of these reports cannot be expressed in that manner, since there is a particular obligation, particularly in international responsibility around these reports, and there can only be one report, one finding, and therefore one conclusion. This portfolio committee has not been put in a position to make that conclusion, even if it means noting the report. It is not something that we can simply take note of and walk away. We're talking of an authority that guards the whole of the aviation industry. It has a particular responsibility and it has to retain a particular credibility. And therefore, Chairperson, I think it would be irresponsible for this committee not to summon and to hear and to interrogate and ask questions to the previous head of aircraft investigations, Mr. Mashaba. I so propose. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Hunsinger, Honorable Mapela.
Good, President, and towards the two Engilton and Spain. I think, Chairperson, at some point when we were dealing with the issue of the Civil Aviation Amendment Bill, there was an instance where we were pushing for ASIP to be completely independent out of SACAR, and the department in their responses were seemingly not really in favor of that, because one of the issues that they raised was that that is going to create, it might create possibly another SOE. And we also, I remember I made an inquiry in terms of, is it feasible for AAID to be funded by SACAR and for them to share premises in this instance? Because Mr. Albert Puti is talking about someone sending WhatsApp messages to someone, someone not acting. So there is a strong case for an actual ASIP to be completely independent from SACAR. And if possible, the funding thereof needs to come directly from the department and not that they get funding from from SACAR. But seemingly the minister this morning is seemingly agreeing with our position then, whereas the department then made a complete a different undertaking there. So I think I agree with him, with the minister, that the portfolio committee must process this, and also just to agree with Honorable Chris Hansinger that we can also deal with that issue. I think maybe one thing that I need to raise with you, Chair, I think perhaps it's just an oversight on the side of the Deputy Minister. Deputy Minister, UDM, Uchikunga, because I see that she is in contravention of Rule 64F, where it impresses on us as members when they attend official sittings of parliament and portfolio committees that we must not wear party symbols. I see that she is wearing something that resembles an ANC logo, but perhaps it's just an oversight, but I think maybe in future we should take care not to contravene the rules of Parliament. Thank you, Chair.
My apologies.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mapena and Honorable Winsinger. Let me check if we have support in terms of the proposal by Honorable Winsinger of bringing summoning Mr. Mashaba to the committee. Honorable Manu.
Chair, thank you very much. And my view is based on what I had asked and the minister had responded to. We have a report here in front of us. And I think procedurally, let's take care of that, which I think is what you were summarizing. And we know we closed it. The issues raised in particular by my colleague, Honorable Hunsinger, and I think Honorable McGee to an extent, Honorable Rod, are very important. But let's introduce them because bringing this colleague, Mr. Mashaba, if I had well, coming to give his version, will not change the content of the report, but it will influence our course of direction as a portfolio committee, rightfully so, to correct whatever needs to be corrected. So there are two separate issues here. There is a report that we cannot alter, we cannot change. But arising of the report, we have a responsibility. And if I hear my colleague very well, in order for us to do our oversight work and influence future policy, stroke legislation, trajectory, the input of a certain Mr. Mashaba or anybody for that matter would be influential, or rather useful. In that instance, if my understanding is well, I do support that. Maybe not limited to him, that the committee can look at who else is needed. But that proposal, absolutely no objection to it from my side. I support it with the understanding that we are not trying to alter the report, but we are trying to influence how we respond into the future. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, maybe let me leave it at that Mr. Mashaba will be summoned. The only hiccup, though, honorable members, which I want us to really apply our mind on, we have an appeal on this report. It means this report is not conclusive. And we may have a totally different report out of the appeal process, and which will necessitate us coming back here at this same committee and dealing with the outcome of the report. I thought what I was saying when the two hands were raised was that there is no trains match. This report is not conclusive. It will help us if we wait for the report, for this process of appeal to be concluded and take it from there. If would still need to talk to Mr. Mashaba or any other person we deem fit to talk to in order to carry our responsibility. Then we do at that particular time once and for all. Let me just get the feeling of the committee on that, because I think it will actually stand us into good stead rather than taking an action now and at a later stage take another action or nullify the action we have taken. Why can't we allow the processes to be exhausted and then take a view after that whether these are the people we want to talk to and this is the structure that we think we want to revisit and relook whether we did right or wrong. Let me just hear your views on that one. Honorable Chris Unsinger, Honorable Mabena, and Honorable Mani. This will be the last hands I will entertain on this matter, and we'll be moving to the next item. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, as I understand it, upon the release of the report, which was on the 24th of March, 2020, there is a natural appeals window. It is not so that we have an appeal or that appeals have been tabled. It is a window period. Now, this period can pass numb and nothing would have happened. It is therefore not so, Chairperson, that appeals can be lodged and the report can be changed. This report cannot be changed in any way. The report stands. And this portfolio committee must note the report and its findings. However, it is upon this portfolio committee to react of the findings of the report. In other words, it is absolutely our responsibility to react to the negligence, the disregard, and the carelessness that is highlighted in this report. But we've only had one component of that through the presentation this morning. It is therefore my submission, Chairperson, that we as soon as possible get the input in addition to that in order to evaluate to what extent this negligence, disregard, and carelessness should be channeled, especially in light of a piece of legislation which is soon to be returned from the NCOP to us for assentment. So therefore, Chairperson, I submit that the appeals process is one which we cannot interfere with in any way unless we want to appeal in whatever form, but that is a natural process which transpires with or without appeals being tabled. There is no appeal that has been tabled which can influence the report in any way. The report stands, and we've got to note that report at best. But we've got to take a stance in terms of our oversight responsibility and the direction going forward. And it is in light of that and in light of the rather one-sided information that we have been presented with this morning, which can either be confirmed by this Mr. Mashaba, or additional information can assist us to then address this in a particular direction. So therefore, Chairperson, I submit and I propose that Mr. Mashaba be summoned as quick as possible so that we get that, because again, it is a parallel process. It does not have any influence on the appeals process whatsoever, neither on the content and findings and recommendations of the report. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Unsinger, Honorable Mabena.
I suppose, Chairperson, I think, let me also just add that the report that was brought to the Portfolio Committee is not a draft report. It's a conclusive report. The fact that there are other reports, but what is important is that we are processing the current report, which is before the Portfolio Committee, and as such, we're acting on what has been presented. And it is important to note, Chair, that when the report was tabled, it didn't say that the report is inconclusive or anything like that, or it's a draft report, but a report was presented to the Portfolio Committee. We therefore take it as a complete report, not a report which has not been fully processed by the department. That is why they brought it before the Portfolio Committee. And then also just one other issue in terms of procedure, when we do invite, because I think there's no question in terms of whether Mr. Mashaba should come before the Portfolio Committee on Transport or not. I think there hasn't been any dissenting view so far. I think we're in agreement as far as that is concerned. But in terms of procedure, Chair, what then do we do? Do we ask him to provide us maybe with, I don't know, some his version of events and as to what transpired before he comes to the committee? And also, does he make a presentation, or is going to be a situation where he's before the committee and we do a Q&A session, like in terms of the procedural? How best can we can we do it? And also, it's important here to note that we have the responsibility of oversight, NY, the legislature. So administrative and executive processes do not really have an impact on us. We are acting on what has been given and information which was supplied to us from the executive authority, and we're acting on that. And therefore, the processes of the Portfolio Committee on Transport have no bearing whatsoever. And it's important to note that this does not and cannot impact negatively on any other administrative process which the executive authority and the department is engaged with. But ours is, as the legislature's oversight, and Mr. Mashaba must come and account before the Portfolio Committee. And we have those powers that he will be summoned, but maybe let's deal with the procedural nature of that action. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Manu.
Thank you, Chair. No, my colleagues are deepening the crisis here. Chair, my view has not changed on the issue of whether we call summons Mr. Mashaba or whoever else or not. Let me state that up front. What seems, in my view, to be coming up is that in my listening to the presentations, I heard that there is an appeal. And my colleague, Honorable Hunsinger, is saying there is no appeal. There is a process of a window, if I heard him well. And I hope I'm not misrepresenting him. So if, therefore, there is an appeal, of which this is what I thought I had also. What then, let's assume Mr. Mashaba comes and we forge ahead and he raises information that is contrary to what is in the report. What then? What do we do? So I think we are setting ourselves for unnecessary criticism of hastily jumping into conclusions, because I hear my colleagues saying, the report is one-sided, or the presentation rather not the report. I think presentation was one-sided. And I think it's unfair because the report is there for all of us to read. I am 100% chair for scrutiny, for robust oversight. But I think it is a bit unfair, honestly, if I heard well that the report is there for another. If the court sets aside the report, my colleague says it cannot be changed. But what if the court sets it aside? I don't know. Therefore, my counter proposal is that let's not take this decision, but let's rather seek an opinion from our internal legal people that will advise us accordingly. Is there an appeal or not? If there is, what are the implications in us interviewing the people, as we have mentioned, so that as we move forward, we are clear rather than trying to say who is wrong and right. I think we are all talking the same thing. We want to achieve the same thing. But in order to all of us be satisfied, I want to suggest or counter-propose my honorable colleague, Honorable Hunsinger's proposal, that his proposal, again, I'm not opposing, but I'm saying, can we suspend it and get clarity legally as to the standing of this report, whether we won't compromise it, and so forth. And if it's all clear, I'm by all means fully behind it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Manu. Honorable Ramata.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairperson and my colleagues. Chairperson, may I switch off my video because we're having load shedding and Chairperson, when listening to the discussions, I support Honorable Manu on the issue of suspending our input or our scrutinizing the report. And as it has been indicated that there is an appeal, it's not, I think what we can do is just to note the report until we get a report that is not appealed. That's my submission, Chairperson. I support that we take this report, or we note the report as the portfolio committee. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Let me just allow a department to respond to, I think this should be simple. Is there any appeal made on this report and its findings so that we do not second guess each other in this portfolio committee? Minister, if you are still there, or Deputy Minister, can we get clarity on that issue?
Yes, the appeal was received on the January 27. Yes, the appeal was received, and that the regulations are very clear that any interested party that is aggrieved by the findings may lodge an appeal with the minister within 60 days of the publication of the findings. It is therefore, Chair, immaterial whether people have seen the appeal or not. It is more about the legal process as per Part 12 of the Civil Aviation Regulations 2011. Thank you.
Okay. I think that matter is now cleared up. I wouldn't want us to go any route of contesting any of our views. Let me try and summarize our the conclusions of the committee and see if we are jelly. The committee is of the same view that persons like Mr. Mashaba will be called to the committee to be interviewed. The committee is also of the view that let's take a holistic approach on this matter. If indeed this matter is, there is appeal on this matter, it should give us an opportunity to exhaust all the channels in terms of what we want to do in this committee. Maybe it makes sense also to say, let's just check legally and our timing of calling Mr. Mashaba, whether it will not jeopardize any process moving forward. If it doesn't, then we'll then resolve and call someone, Mr. Mashaba, to be interviewed by this committee, not to write a different report than this or his own report. I think those are the issues that were raised by this committee in noting the report. Thank you very much. Can we thank the department and move quickly to the other report, the second and third quarter expenditure report is in front of us. I would have wanted us to take a presentation for 30 minutes and then questions maybe for another 30 minutes so that we can also try and deal with other issues. I take that we have read the report. I know the report is about 92 pages. So I would want us to get to a point where we touch direct issues that we want to emphasize on. Minister?
Thank you, Stalo. I have a NCCC meeting and I've got issues in that meeting. So let me usher in the report, and the Deputy Minister, I think, will remain. Should we'll be required to respond on some of the issues. But the members of the committee and the acting DG and the team that you will be working with to present to the portfolio committee, we are presenting the department's performance in the second and third quarter of the 2021-2022 financial year. During this time, we navigated better the uncertainties posed by COVID, though easing of restrictions and load capacity limitations, the recovery of the sector was gradual. Chair, we continue to optimize our working arrangements, mainly to continue mitigating the spread of the virus, whilst also maintaining a clear focus on our deliverables. For the two quarter under review, we intensified the internal red flags process by addressing performance backlogs while having a clear focus on our annual deliverables. Our presentation will also indicate that the department has achieved 84% of targets that it had set for quarter three, a slight drop from quarter two outcomes. Chair, where we recorded underperformance, remedial actions have been put in place to ensure that we meet our performance targets. Although our second quarter performance had improved in comparison to quarter one, there was a notable downward trend in the third quarter. Most of those areas of underperformance have since been addressed. We've been monitoring those areas on a weekly basis to fast track those with our control and also engage our external partners to assist in expediting progress in respect of targets that have external dependencies. We remain optimistic that the picture will improve when we report on the fourth quarter and annual performance for the financial year. Honorable members, we have taken to heart your call for us to act decisively and with speed in tackling underperformance and accelerate interventions that stifle service delivery. Early in the year, I convened a sector planning session that seeks to create a clear line of sight between what we will deliver at the legislative and policy level and what our implementing agents must focus on over the medium term. Our efforts will be directed at delivering tangible outcomes that the citizens can see, feel, and experience. The department has spent 29.047 billion during the second quarter, or 44% of the total available budget, against the target of 31.928 billion, indicating an underspending of 2.88 billion rand. The underspending was mainly due to slow progress in the implementation of a number of projects and on the transfer and subsidies, mainly to PRASA, due to non-compliance identified by the department. To address this, the department has sought to prioritize service delivery projects, and after engagement with PRASA, the entity was able to meet the conditions and payment was made in November 2021. During the third quarter, the department had spent 49.619 billion against the projected spending of 59.319 billion, indicating an underspending of 1.7 billion. The delay in spending in the third quarter was mainly on compensation of employees, goods and services and transfers and subsidies. As part of the monitoring grant, the department has withheld transferred to the non-complying municipalities for the public transport network grant and the proposed revised payment schedule to pay the municipalities once they comply. During the month of July 21, civil unrest in KwaZulu-Natal, Gauteng affected SANRAL. As a result, it impacted traffic volumes as a result of road closures, which resulted in SANRAL losing toll revenue on the affected routes. And additional funding amounting to 62.6 billion was then allocated to SANRAL to mitigate the loss. We have previously reported that the City of Cape Town spending for the Phase 2A has been running behind schedule. The city had requested the rescheduling of the funds, that were allocated from the budget facility for infrastructure. A total of 1.34 billion reduction was effected to the 2021-22 public transport network grant allocation for Cape Town, for City of Cape Town, to align the finding to the revised implementation plan of Phase 2A of the MyCity Bus rapid transit system. However, this rescheduling could only be effected after the division of revenue was approved, as it was already under consideration by Parliament. As such, this reduction was to correct the publication error in the Division of Revenue Act. A total of 11.2 million was also allocated under compensation of employees to cover costs related to the improvement on condition of service. Chairperson, through your indulgence, I would like to invite the Acting Director General to the committee through a detailed presentation on the department's second and third quarter expenditure and performance report. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Minister, Director.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning, esteemed members. Thank you, Minister, and good morning, Deputy Minister and colleagues from the department. We'll definitely be checking the committee on the second quarter, third quarter expenditure and the performance analysis of the year under review. And may I request that the presentation is put on the screen. While the presentation, Chair, I will take the executive summary of the report, and the Minister has pretty much covered some of the executive summary that I will touch on, after which I will request the CFO, Mr. Matlala, to take us through the expenditure per program of quarter two and quarter three. And then Mr. Ramanzi will then talk to the detailed performance of the department as per the branch. And then that would be our presentation. Thank you very much. The department chair and members, the budget amounts to 65.437 billion for the year 21-22 financial year. The department thus far spent 44% in the second quarter, and then it incrementally to 76% of the third quarter. And we are a transferring department. Most of our budget goes to our 12 entities. So for the second quarter, the department spent 29 billion against the projected expenditure of 31 billion, indicating an underspendage of 2.8 billion. And the delay in spending, I think Minister has covered this, was mainly of the transfers, subsidies as a result of the funds withheld for CRASA to make sure that they're in compliance. Can we go to the next slide? So the third quarter, the department has spent 49 billion rand against the projected 51. So we were 1.7 below in terms of underspending. And then the delay in spending for the third quarter was mainly on compensation of employees. The department anticipates an underspending on goods and services. I think it's been our concern as a department. And then we had a plan in place to make sure that we revise our procurement plans to make sure that we fast track the spending in the year under review. As part of the monitoring of grants, the department has withheld transfer to the non-compliant municipalities. And I think we came to this committee two weeks ago, if I'm not mistaken, to talk about the public transport network grants and the proposed revised payment schedules to pay for the municipalities once they've complied. I think the matter was dealt thoroughly during this sitting. The department, as a transferring officer, maintained a milestone tracking system that requires receiving officers to report as an annexure to the monthly expenditure report on the process of the previous funded milestone. I think that's how we have tried to actively be involved when we deal with our entities. The withholding of transfer is to ensure that the receiving officer comply with the Division of Revenue Act framework through rendering milestone assessments that are required as a qualifier for subsequent transfer. And then the assessment chair allows for the repositioning of previously funded milestones which associated with cash flows requirements. And then the transferring officer regards the withhold as a performance corrective measure, not as a punitive one. I think we need to emphasize that. We just want to make sure that as we transfer the money, it's spent wisely. And then if there are any gaps in between, then we make sure that they are corrective measures to make sure that we continue doing the work that we do in terms of transferring to these entities. Next slide. As a performance, not the previous one, yeah. As the annual performance plan, the target for the year, that is under compensation of employees. We said we wanted to fill up 50 posts to date of the reporting, which is from the 1st of April 2021 to the 30th of December. The department has managed to fill a total of 47 posts, 15 for the first quarter, 15 for the second quarter, and the 17 for third quarter. 19 of the positions filled at senior management level, with the remainder being at a lower level. It should, however, be noted that 27 of the total posts filled to date has been through internal promotion. As you close the gaps, you open another gap. So it becomes a visual cycle, which we are trying to make sure that we speed up the lead time from advertising the positions to a point where we appoint. This compounds the record resignation, combated by the recorded resignations, retirement, transfer out of the department, contributes to the pace of the filling of vacancies. So the executive committee of the department has then approved the recruitment intervention plan mainly on the senior management level and the middle management level, which will ensure that the filling of vacancies posts are in line with the targeted objectives of the financial year. I think we are sitting here at the last stage of approval, about 8 positions. 7 of them are at the director level, and then 1 chief director positions. Once they've been approved, and then we'll be able to improve our recruitment strategy as a department. So, under goods and services and transfer and subsidies, goods and services in consultation with the ESCO, the department is reviewing the procurement processes to improve efficiency and eliminate delay. And this has proven to be an effective intervention to make sure that this particularly on our goods and services, we are able to spend. Transfer and subsidies are to roll out due to court judgment. Funds still due for the after rollout has been declared as saving to allow for other processes to unfold. An OR Tambo District Municipality for the Rural Road Asset Management System grant funds to the municipality has been released in January 2022, which is also going to reflect positively on our expenditure. Public Transport Network grant, the withholding of the transfer to ensure that the receiving officers comply with the EORA grant framework through rendering milestone assessments that are required as a qualifier for subsequent transfer. I think this matter was dealt with in the previous sitting where we're discussing the PRMG. Next slide. Chair, from this slide, page 8, I will then request the CFO to take the committee on the presentation. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Member.
Thank you, Acting Director, Ntate Madia. CFO. Can I get Ntate Man?
Matlala.
Matlala, Chair.
Matlala. Mkoni.
One chili cool. Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister, Honorable Deputy Minister, for the opportunity to present the second quarter and the third quarter expenditure reports. If the committee looks at the slide that is displayed on the screen, you can see that we showing the expenditure report for the second quarter on the left, side, and then the colored gray part is showing the expenditure report for the third quarter. Just taking through the committee in terms of the second quarter, you can see in total that as indicated by the Honorable Minister and Acting DG, the total underspending was 2.8 billion. And they've already shared the explanation that if we look at the rail transport there in the second quarter, you can see that the underspending there was 2.5 billion, which they already indicated that after the compliance with the requirements of the estimate of national expenditure, that amount have been paid after the quarter has concluded. Because if you look into your right, you can see now at least the rail transport was on par when we look at the third quarter. And if I go to the third quarter, Chairperson, Honorable Chair, we hear the underspending for at the end of December was 1.7 billion, and is divided into the various branches. Administration was underspending by 116 million, in ITP by 23 million, rail transport 14 million, road transport 97 million, civil aviation 48 million, and maritime transport 40 million, and with regards to public transport is 1.3 billion. Then we will give more explanation in terms of that in the next slide. If we look at the program one, you can see the underspending there is mainly on compensation of employees, but the highest contributing item there is our goods and services, and it is mainly due to the non-payment for the office accommodation, and this amount up to the end of December amounted to about 88.5 million. And this will be settled as soon as the dispute between the department and the service provider has been resolved. In the meantime, I would like to inform the committee that the Department of Public Works have appointed an architect who came and measured the space occupied by DOT, and the report is almost completed. And with that completed, we'll be able to see the actual space occupied by DOT, because we have been being overcharged in terms of the space that we occupy. And we expect to pay about 88.5 million only for the office accommodation in terms of the preliminary calculations, Chairperson. In terms of the transfer and subsidies, this is due to the delay in payments of bursaries for non-employees, and most of the outstanding fees for qualifying universities have already been disbursed in February, which is of course after the second quarter that have expired. In regards of this particular branch, 22.8 million has been shifted to this program to fund additional funding requests for the transport information system and the automation tools for information technology audit. Funds were shifted across programs from items such as travel and subsistence and venues and facilities, as from various projects that were put on hold. Next slide, please. When I go to program two, the underspending is also mainly on the goods and services. And in this particular branch, they've decided, Chairperson, to utilize internal capacity for the following project: the regional integration strategy, the regional transport integration market strategy, and as well as the district development model. And as a result, there were savings. Instead of appointing consultants, this particular project were done by the internal officials. Furthermore, contributing in this branch is the due to the less traveling and subsistence expenditure. When I proceed to program three, which is rail transport, in their goods and services, the delays was due to the delay in the establishment of rail economic regulator and the national rail bill, which is still at consultation stages. In this particular branch, 18.1 million was shifted to this program to fund the creation of a concessioning authority whereby the private sector will be invited to invest in the passenger rail project, as well as the housing development agency to be appointed to manage the establishment of temporary residential areas and the resettlement of households residing in the Prasa Railway Reserve in the city of Cape Town. Then I proceed to program four, the road transport. Here, the delays in spending was on the projects such as the road disaster management plan and the development of the road asset tool, as well as other projects. Furthermore, the procurement process for the program development for Samba Songwe has been finalized and the tender has been recommended by the bid adjudication committee to the accounting officer to make approve the appointment. The program has also reprioritized funds allocated to the regulation of the high cube containers, the road transport legislative and standard to supplement the government gazette fees for the road transport bills. In the transfers and subsidies, the underspending is anticipated underspending under the Road Traffic Infringement Agency for the ARTO rollout, as well as the non-payment for the OR Tambo District Municipality for the Rural Route Asset Management System. Funds for the OR Tambo District Municipality has fortunately, Chairperson, been released in January after the court judgment, funds after the court judgment. And then with ARTO, rollout, this has been declared as a saving until the court judgment processes have been completed. In this branch, 7.4 million has been reprioritized from various low spending projects, running costs such as travel and subsistence, venues and facilities, and also saving from under machinery and equipment in order to fund identified projects across and within the department. In the civil aviation, the underspending is due to the goods and services due to less anticipated spending on the watchkeeping services project. The non-spending on the project such as National Aviation Transformation Strategy, the correction factor, and the AXA and ATNS, as well as other projects. In this branch, 8.4 million has been reprioritized from slow spending projects and running costs in order to defray additional funding requests across programs and to also fund new programs within the program that will be undertaken in the current financial year. Program six, the goods and services mainly is to non-spending on the following projects: the feasibility study on the tugboat services, the Maritime Development Fund Bill, and the Merchant Shipping Bill, which is still awaiting comment from the state law advisors as well as other operational costs. The program has put measures to fast track the response from the Office of the State Law Advisor. In this branch, 4.9 million has been reprioritized from slow spending project and running costs in order to defray additional funding requests across programs within the department. Funds were also prioritized within the program in order to fund the anticipated shortfall of the oil pollution prevention services project and to fund the small vessel surveyor training program to be implemented by SAMHSA on behalf of the department. In Program 7, underspending is mainly due to the public transport grant, which is in the transfers and subsidies due to the delays as a result of the construction capacity, implementation of IPTN and district models due to the delays on implementation of integrated public transport network plans, as well as the tender is still at the bid evaluation stages for the process and the Shova-Galula bicycle, as well as other projects. In the transfers and subsidies, there was a withholding for the following cities: City of Cape Town, City of Johannesburg, Nelson Mandela Bay, Polokwane, and Tshwane and Etegwini, as these municipalities have not complied with the milestones, as well as low spending in the taxi recapitalization, which is demand driven. In terms of the public transport network grant, the transferring officer regards the withholding as a performance corrective measure and not a punitive one. It should be noted that the municipality's financial year is ending in June of each year. Therefore, the municipalities still have got time to correct, ensure that the funds are spent before the end of the financial year. In this branch, the 16.9 million has been shifted from slow spending projects as well as from running costs such as travel and subsistence in order to defray additional funding requests across and within the department. Also, there is a 16.9 million which has been shifted for slow spending, as well as the sorry for repeating that. Let's go to the next slide, deal with the International Oil Pollution Compensation Fund. The invoice for the direct charge for the International Oil Pollution Compensation Fund, which was supposed to be transferred during the month of December 2021, have only been received and was processed in February 2022. The delay in the processing of the invoice was due to technical errors on foreign payments, which rejected the payment on the system. Then the next slide looks at the expenditure per economic classification. There you can see that for the quarter two, we're still sitting at 2.8 billion as if we look at the total, and quarter three, we're sitting at 1.7 billion, which translating to 76% spending. And then the next slide just gives the details of the reasons for the underspending as listed there. You can see some of the projects I've already dealt with them in my previous slides. And I will request that we proceed to the next slide, which deals with the transfer payment. There you can see clearly that at the end of quarter three, on the public transport network grant, is that 1 billion underspending, and also underspending on the road traffic infringement agency, and lastly on the transport sector. The non-payment for the transfer for the public transport network grant for the cities, and you mentioned that in that category, City of Cape Town, 462 million, City of Joburg, 215 million, Nelson Mandela, 57, Polokwane, 36, City of Tshwane, 136, and Etegwini, 156. As these municipalities, by the end of December, they have not yet complied. Furthermore, we have got on the rural route asset management, the 2 million, to the district of OR Tambo municipality, which I as indicated was paid only in January. The road traffic infringement agency was affected by the rollout, which was held put on hold due to the court processes. Next slide, which also deal with the transfers. Furthermore, we can see that the taxi scraping underspending at 179, and the bazaaries to non-employees, which I've already talked to 3.4, the international organization 3.4, and these are the reasons is that the tax is creeping. We know that it is demand driven, and there were delay in the bursary payment for the non-employees, as well as the savings to foreign membership fees. Then the next slide, Chairperson and Honorable Chairperson and members, shows us the transfers to our provinces for the provincial road maintenance grant, which so far it is in line with the DORA framework and the DORA transferring schedule. Then we go to the public transport operation grant, which is still on par, sitting at 70% by the end of December. Then where there was a problem, as indicated, was on the public transport network grant for the cities I mentioned previously. You can see by end of December, we were sitting at 54%. And the next slide is touching base on the items that were adjusted during the presentation of the medium-term budget framework, where, as indicated, 66.6 was allocated to SANRAL for the revenue loss that they suffered during the event of July. And then there was also a declared underspending on the public transport network grant for 1.3 billion. And basically in relation to the city of Cape Town, where they revised their implementation plan, which affected the change in the cash flow towards that particular city. Furthermore, the department was allocated 11 million for the compensation of employees. And finally, there was also funds shifted within the department to address the upgrading of the fiber linkages and switches in the Department of Transport Information System. That is the summary, Chairperson, and detailed report for the expenditure. And I'll hand over to my colleague to proceed with the non-financial performance. Thank you, Chairperson.
Ngoni, Santakane. Next, let's hear.
Thank you, Chairperson. For the benefit of time, I'll consider the report as read. I'll just highlight the key issues. Because the quarter two and three, we just took a synopsis of what happened in quarter two, but incrementally, we are going to base our presentation on quarter three. As can be seen that in quarter three, our performance was at 84%. We've got six targets that were not met out of a total of 37 for the quarter under review. If you look at the comparative analysis, we had we were sitting on 74% in quarter one, which then increased to 89, and we had a slight dip to 84 in quarter three. Just the key performance areas on selected ones. Chair, the filling of vacancies, we are sitting on 47 as at quarter three against an annual target of 50. So we are very confident that we'll meet the annual target on this one. And as part of the requirements of the MTSF, we have disaggregated our beneficiaries in terms of women, youth, and persons with disabilities. And you can see that the 17 vacant positions that were filled, 18 were women, 5 were youth, and 0 persons with disabilities were employed in quarter three. In terms of the 17, 8 of these were internal promotions and 9 were appointments from external institutions. We had 1 resignation and 1 retirement, mainly to note that the vacancy rate then reduced from 25.4 that was recorded at the end of September to slightly to 24.7 as at the end of quarter three. And that is in terms of the entire establishment, but in terms of the funded positions only, our vacant positions stand at 16.2%. We'll continue to work in the department to ensure that we we reduced that vacancy to less than 10. In terms of training interventions, 164 training interventions were coordinated. We had a headcount of 107, and which is 24% of the establishment. 96 of the 107 were women, 65 were youth, and then we had two African males representing persons with disabilities in that space. With regard to bursaries, 27 bursaries were recommended for approval in quarter three. 16 of those were women, 8 were youth, and 1 person with disability, bringing a total number of bursaries to the DOT to 169, 105 of those being women, 38 being youth, and 1 person with disability in that consignment. Obviously, this is going to be impacted by those who will be completing their studies, and those who will be exiting the program at the end of the financial year. In program two, very quickly, I just want to put a finger on the migration of rail-friendly cargo from road to rail. Our target over the MTSF is to move 10% of rail-friendly cargo from road to rail. As at the end of December 2021, the main risk that is coming out there is that Transnet has lost market share over the last 2 years due to COVID. In March 2019, we had moved 6.1 million tons to be moved off the road to rail. As at the end of December, we are now moving 5.3, which is a loss of market share. So in terms of the draft migration plan that has been developed, we still need to then address the issue of the market share that we have lost vis-a-vis more rail-friendly cargo that we need to move from road to rail. The area or where we have not achieved it, the development of an inception report for the drafting of regulations for autonomous vehicle technology. We have the inception report, but internally, it's just an internal technical issue that the inception report was not submitted to us on time. But we are very sure that in terms of the development of draft regulations, we will be able to achieve them at the end of the financial year, taking into consideration that the inception report has already been submitted to us. In terms of rail, the PSP framework and the HSR framework are targeted for the cluster meeting of March 2022, and we anticipate that it will be approved from there. It will then be approved by the Minister for Introduction to Cabinet. And the only area where, which is also a key risk for the annual performance, is on the rail bill submission to Cabinet. This will not happen as the rail bill hasn't been to the SA cluster as was targeted. The dependency there being the rail policy. The rail policy is being fast-tracked. It is already set at the SA cluster, and it's now implementing resolutions of the SA cluster, and it will be approved by the cluster to go to cabinet before the end of the financial year. That will then open up space for the rail bill to move quicker as well. In terms of the road transport, very quickly, if we look at the area of underachievement on this one, the issue around the road traffic law enforcement entities integrated into one, consultations are now happening in quarter three with the RTMC, RTA, and DLCA. The only issue that we are mulling with is the continued impasse with the National Treasury with regards to the associated cost implications regarding the integration of these of the entities. With regard to the National Anti-Fraud and Corruption Strategy, we are reporting a scope change on this one because of the already approved National Anti-Fraud and Corruption Strategy. We won't be going at full scale to actually ensure that we have the one that is demarcated for the traffic environment, road traffic environment. It will be included in that, in the already approved one, as a chapter in that one. To that effect, we are correcting that through an internal submission in the department, and we will report negatively on the previous scope. And next year, we'll then focus on incorporating the strategy into the national one. Civil aviation, the main issue of contention is around the state of aviation safety, particularly in general aviation, where we continue to report fatal accidents and cumulative fatalities. In that regard, we are in consultation with SACA to ensure that the interventions to mitigate these are implemented. To that effect, a 5-year general aviation strategy has been developed, and the Civil Aviation Safety Plan Implementation Committee has been established to mainly look at the areas of concerns, which are around airspace safety, airspace safety, flight data analysis, rotorcraft safety, and the human error in that space. The interventions put in place are still in the initial year of implementation, and we anticipate that in the outer years, we'll start seeing a decrease in this regard. With regard to maritime, very quickly, corporatization has been pronounced, but there are just a slight issues that follow that pronouncement that we need to counter with, and the detail is in the submission and the report that we've sent to PCOT. Also, with regard to the three-foot plan, the detail is in the it's in the slides. The areas that we are mulling with are with regards to the development fund bill. We are targeting the cluster meeting of March, pending receipt of a CIA certificate. We can confirm that certification from the state law advisor has come through. We are just awaiting receipt of the CIA certificate before we go to the cluster of the 15th of March. And that also the same also exists for the merchant shipping bill. That is, we have received the state law advisor certificate, awaiting CIAs, and then we're taking it to the cluster and to cabinet. In terms of road transport, at the top, the average passenger trips, we were reporting at some point 143,000. That has decreased to around 107,000 due to decreased demand for the services as a result of COVID-19. In terms of the other issues, the public transport funding model, consultations have been conducted. We are looking at legal issues on whether the constitution would allow for other spheres to introduce new and additional charges and other issues that are part of those consultations. Also, the empowerment of the taxi industry, consultations with Santago were conducted as targeted. The main issue of contention is around the taxi recap. It continues to report low figures. Year to date, 1,545 OTV scrapped, and what we are discussing with the public transport branch is now the determination of a cut-off date for scrapping, particularly with regards to illegal panel vans as per determination. And we think that once we set a cut-off date and we also continue with our marketing, then the uptake will go higher. With regard to PTOG, the figures in terms of route subsidized, kilometer subsidized, and trip subsidized. But if you look at the subsidized, the passengers who benefited, they amount to around 53 million as at the end of December 2022. These numbers are not a true reflection due to the decrease in demand. And also that there's too much reliance on the grant, and provinces are not supplementing the grant with their equitable share. We're seeing a considerable amount of unsubsidized services due to unattended backlogs, and as a result, the current allocation is only spent on the old order passes. Shova Kalula, we are sitting at 8,633 against an annual target of 10,000. We've underperformed in quarter three, but some of these that were earmarked for quarter three had already been distributed in quarter one and two. There was a question in the previous meeting around why KwaZulu-Natal and Limpopo, because they have vast rural spaces. Those provinces did not submit their list on time with regard to other outstanding bicycles, which resulted in the delay in delivery of those to those provinces. But all other provinces submitted their lists on time, and the delivery of bicycles was then prioritized. In terms of consolidated indicators, very quickly, we are sitting on 79 trains that have been produced by the Gibela factory since inception. In terms of the number of stations modernized, we were also prioritizing the stations along the central line and also the Mopane line. The Mopane line has now been reopened and is now operational. And then we anticipate that incrementally we'll go to full operations by October 2022. Job creation continues to be low in that space. In terms of passenger rail trips, metro rail, cumulatively, we're sitting at around 12.5 million. And in terms of rail safety occurrences, we are reporting 48 occurrences in quarter three, but year to date we are reporting 181 occurrences. In terms of security occurrences, we are reporting year to date 1,310, which is low and in line with our target to reduce. In terms of the jobs reported in the national road maintenance, we're reporting 7,823 jobs. Around 3.8 of those are youth and around 2.1 are women, with 51 persons with disabilities benefiting from those jobs. With regards to the Shova Kalula, those are the figures that have been presented at PRMG Siamba Sonke, and these are the number of jobs that are reported in that Siamba Sonke program. With regard to jobs from the aviation AXA program, we are reporting 12,522 job opportunities supported as at 31 December 2021 for the financial year. And obviously the reviewed regulations are now, for ARPAs are now sitting with CACOM in line with the requirement for approval. With regards to the maritime safety incident rate and fatality rate, we are reporting far less than what we have targeted, which is good for our targets, and we will continue to monitor this to ensure that we keep it below the 10, 2, and 3 reportable rates as targeted. This has already been stated above. With regard to COVID-19, very quickly, the internal interventions, this is the allocated budget for the financial year, which is around 1 million, and we've spent around 691,000 of that, and we are also giving the breakdown of where the funds have been spent in that regard. And this just covers the additional requests that were requested, that we submit our quarterly report on expenditure on time. We had made a proposal to submit the quarterly expenditure reports 7 working days before a confirmed scheduled committee sitting, and also that we provide a clear plan to address non-achievements. We have stated our response, and with regard to what we are going to be responding on a quarterly basis as per request of the National Assembly, the quarterly reports on non-compliance by municipalities linked to public transport network, we have provided as annexures the report for quarter 1, quarter 2, and quarter 3 of the 21-22 financial year. And also on the expenditure reports, on the breakdown of expenditure for scholar transport, we have already provided the annexures B1, B2, B3 and B4 that talks to quarter 1, quarter 2 and quarter 3. We'll also in the next quarter provide this additional one. And as a ones of requirement, the report on the appointment of security personnel to assist in safeguarding CASA infrastructure, we've also attached a report as well as the request for additional information in this regard. I think, FTDG, this is where we end with our report. It's back to you.
Thank you very much, colleagues, CFO and Mr. Ramansi. And I will then hand over to the chair. Thank you very much. Oh, sorry. I think the Deputy Minister, can I hand over back to Deputy Minister to hand over to the chair? Thank you very much.
McDonald's, no, after April in the meeting, please. Deputy Minister, you want to say something?
No, Chairperson, I think that covers our presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Let me see, Hans. Honorable Lawrence McDonald, Honorable Mapena, Honorable Nontando, Noluchungu. These are the three hands. Thank you very much. Let's forge ahead.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the team of the Department of Transport for the presentation. Chairperson, I just have a couple of questions and remarks. On slide 8 on the expenditure per program, I'm a bit confused, Chairperson, because it shows the quarter two cash, quarter two expenditure and the quarter three expenditure. And I know we are dealing with quarter two now, but then it says there that our total adjusted budget is 16.806 million for the rail. I'm just using the rail transport as an example. And we've spent 27% of the budget, the yearly budget, during quarter two. And then in quarter three, we spent 81% of the yearly budget. Chairperson, 81 and 27 is 109% of the budget. So I'm a little bit confused, Chairperson. Right at the bottom as well, we have 44 plus 76. If I can get some clarity, Chairperson, are they spending more than what they are getting? Or is the tables incorrect? Or can there be some expenditure? Chairperson, then on Mongong, we spent another 880 million on the public transport network on the day. But we don't, what is it spent on? Because there's nothing, there's no public transport network. There's none. The buses that we bought 2 years ago has not transported a single passenger. Not a single passenger. I'm confused here, Jefferson. What are we spending money on if we're not getting value for money? Then on the taxi scrapping, Jefferson, how many taxis were scrapped during this period? Because the figures that we're continuously spending money on taxi scrapping, but every time when the department reports back, the numbers of taxis are not reducing the number of taxis that are supposed to be scrapped. And then, Jefferson, I think on the slide on performance, I just want to get to the slide so that I can, the quarter analysis by program. Chairperson, I'll state this again, and I said it a couple of times. We are completely divorced from what's happening on the ground and what's on service delivery, because we're continuously getting 67% and we're getting 80% and billions are spent on rail transport, but nobody can actually go get on a train, Chairperson. When is this going to end? Is there never going to be a point that we're spending money and we can actually use the infrastructure? I let me leave it there, Chairperson. Thank you.
The next speaker, Babu Mapena.
Towards Chairperson, my question relates to the transfers and subsidies. The underspending in terms of the PTNG with regards to the city of Cape Town, city of Johannesburg, and Nelson Mandela Bay, Polokwane, city of Tshwane, and Ethekwini, as a result of them not having complied with their milestones, and all of that. There was a time when we were in the portfolio committee on transport where we said that I think it was the previous PG, the one that has resigned, that's left. But we said that there should be a monitoring mechanism that would be set up within the department. One, monitor and track progress in terms of the PTNGs which are given to cities in order for them to run these some of these programs. Now, if that was done and it was established, and if they see that in terms of their tracking, there are going to be cities which are not going to be able to meet their targets and milestones, what intervention is there? Or does the department simply fold their arms and say, okay, we've given you a target, you're supposed to meet this target and you're not meeting it, therefore at the end of the day we're just going to withhold or these transfers as a result that you have not met the milestones? I think this is in the spirit of IGR, intergovernmental relations, as far as that's concerned. Because I think at some point we need to realize that there's not, especially within government, there shouldn't be a mentality of working in silos, that everyone is working for the same objective, for the betterment of the mobility and accessibility of transport for the public at large. Now, if there has been such which were promised that is going to be set up, what were the interventions? And again, what were the responses from the affected cities? For instance, that they're not going to meet their milestones. I understand that, especially for the city of Cape Town, they did revise the delivery schedule, and I believe that was approved by the department, but still non-payment was still withheld. And then also the other question comes in terms of the R2 and it being nullified. What then happens now is the department, because I believe that the department is engaged in an appeal process against that judgment, because you have a situation where R2 was being ruled out on a pilot basis in some of the cities. I think City of Johannesburg being one of them, City of Tshwane being one of them, and other cities. What then happens was there were some murmurings in the corridor that some of the cities want to claim back some of those monies, because whatever infringement which is collected through ARTO does not go directly to the city, but goes directly to RTIA and by default to the department. And if there is any engagement whatsoever with the city, and also I don't want to preempt this, but in the event that the appeal is not successful, then what happens? Because also this extends to the people that were issued with fines. Because if I'm sitting with an R2 fine and the matter is still in litigation, like in a court of law, I can perhaps also say, no, this has been dismissed by the court of law. Therefore, pending the appeal, I'm not going to make any obligations to R2 in terms of paying any of those infringements. The other issue comes in terms of the taxi recapitalization program. We have a situation where, like the taxi recap program, the uptake, I understand that it's demand-driven, and I think that there was something that was mentioned in passing about the marketing and whatnot. But what programs are there to encourage uptake on this program? What engagements are there? Because I think perhaps over and above engaging with the two large taxi formations which are there in terms of associations, which is NTA and Santaco, what are other programs and which are there to encourage uptake on the program? And what have they identified as the main cause for the lack of uptake on the program? Because I can tell you, in the streets when we drive among some of the most dilapidated taxis you can find. And then also the issue of the application for operating licenses, some of the taxi operators where they are only having the receipts from the application process. And as such, as someone that has a receipt that they applied for an operator's license, they haven't been granted any, does that person also qualify for their taxi to be scrapped? And then you also find that within some of the taxi associations, there are taxis which are operating on some routes, which do not have operating cards. Yes, there is the board which is there, which is supposed to deal with that, but seemingly they are operating with impunity. What programs are there to encourage even those taxis which have been admitted and as part of an association which are operating on some roads? Yes, we can argue that it's illegal, but fact of the matter is law enforcement is not doing anything about it, and those taxis continue to operate and they still pose like a huge risk on commuters. But I am more interested because since we came into the committee in 2019, the pattern that we've picked up is that monies are budgeted and are put onto the taxi recap program. And those monies, whenever there is an issue which arises within the department, the first program to be generous to like for environment and money to be moved from the tax repair program. So therefore, the account almost serves as a conventional transaction account where you just put money there for a while and then say, no, the demand is low, take that money, move it somewhere. But it seems like there's almost no, there's no drive, there's no willingness. You know, Arrive Alive is a very successful campaign. What if we could do the same thing for the tax repair program? Thank you very much, Chair.
Honorable Norichungu.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also thank the department for the presentation. Somewhere in your introduction, you mentioned that you are anticipating an underspending on goods and services by the end of the financial year. And in order to expedite the spending, what are you doing in order to expedite the spending? Can you please? Sorry, I'm being disturbed.
Cool down. The cool down, I did see that.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. In order to expedite the spending, you have resolved to review and revise the procurement plan. Can you please provide the details as to how you have revised the procurement plan? My second question is that you have withheld transfers to non-complying municipalities. One of the reasons for that, it was stated that it was due to the lack of capacity. Now, for three consecutive years, you have been unable to spend funds. What plans have you put in place to capacitate these municipalities? You've also shifted funds to fund the establishment of temporary residential areas and resettlement of households residing in Trasa Railway Reserve in the city of Cape Town. How far is this process and how long will it take for you to complete it? When is the completion date? The slow uptake of taxi scrapping is a concern that the committee has been raising. And my colleague here has expanded on, you know, on this topic. What are you doing to expedite this process and get it done and over with it? When is the closing date? And then out of the 144 bursaries that you've issued, only one person with disability has benefited from the program. Don't you think that is, you know, it's a number that you need to look at and increase it in the future? And then finally, you have had taxi rikutlas regarding the taxi subsidy. I thought in your presentation, you would give us progress made in that regard. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member Norichungu. Back to you, Deputy Minister, with the Department for responses. We'll give you up until 12.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me first give the opportunity to the acting DG and the officials to respond, then I will come last. DG.
Thank you, Deputy Minister, and thank you, Chair, and the members for the questions. Chair, I've got a team of DDGs responsible for different modes. And I will cover some of the questions that have been raised, particularly because I can see that
Honorable Minister, Deputy Minister, can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you, Chairperson.
I do have time pressures. Would it make any harm if I request you to respond in writing? Just to allow us to touch on other items, will it do any harm really? I will still allow you to say whatever you want to say, but I think, to be honest with the department, 10 minutes will not do. But let's try, and so that you just know that when we arrive at 12, we will allow you to then respond in writing to the remaining questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to clear up the public transport related questions and request Ms. Manana to respond to. There was a question raised on the money versus the visibility of the public transport in Mangaung. There's also a question from Honorable McDonald. There's a question that cuts across on taxi recaps. And there's also a question that was raised on the taxi lihota, the progress made thus far. I'll request Ms. Manana to respond to those questions. I'll request that the CFO to give clarity on the slide 8. Particularly, the example was made by Honorable McDonald on the 27% versus 81% on the third quarter. If he can give a clarity on that. On the issue of the ARTO, I'll request the Advocate Makato to give a response to the question that was raised by Honorable Mapena. Then I will then sum up particularly on the rail mode of transport in relation to Prasa, because we don't have a DDG Makaipi. Over to you, colleagues. If you are mindful of time, we are given 8 minutes with the closing remarks from the Deputy Minister. Thank you.
Thank you, Acting DG and Honorable Members again. Can I request Vusa just to slide 8 so that when I explain this on the screen, slide number 8. Slide number 8. Thank you very much, Chairperson. If we look, as I explained, that we are sharing the quota 2 and quota 3 on the same slide, and maybe I must explain the column so that it is clearly understood by the members. The first column, it is your name of the program. Then we've got the adjusted budget. The adjusted budget is where we have inputted the revised budget after the MTF medium-term budget statement. Then in the quarter two cash flow projection is what the department have planned to spend. By that, it is like a cash flow forecast that by the end of quarter two, the department must have spent 81.9 billion in total. And then the Q2 actual expenditure is what actually the department have spent. Then the underspending column shows you the underspending of the amount we said we will spend in quarter two. Then percentage spent is comparing to say up to the end of September, how much have the department spent in relation to the budget. So the percentage is in relation comparing quarter two actual expenditure versus the adjusted budget. So that is why you see that in that quarter, we only spent 44%. And the main contributor of underspending, if you look at it, was our rail transport, and I explained the reason for that. But then because the payment was made after the second quarter, you can see that the expenditure for rail transport from 4.5 billion in the second quarter, because it is included that backlog, in that quarter they spent 13.5 billion. You can see that 2.5 billion increased sharply the expenditure to the, that is why there was an improvement from 27% to 81%. That is that you are comparing the 13.5 billion to the 16.8 billion. It will give you 81%. So that is how this sheet can be should be analyzed. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, apologies, Chairperson.
I do want Honorable McDonald.
Chairperson, the question here is 27 plus 81 is more than 100%. The question that I asked is, are they spending more money than what the budget was allocated, or is the slide incorrect, Chairperson? I can read the columns 100% perfectly. I've got no problem reading those columns, Chairperson. Thank you.
Can you clarify that point, sir?
Yeah, thank you very much. No, it shows that at the end of the third quarter, they've spent 81%. That is that they still have got 19% to spend in the final quarter of the financial year. So if you look at the budget, then you'll simply say they are left now with 14 million to spend in the final quarter in terms of what is available for them, Chairperson. So they are not overspending their budget if you look at the report, Chairperson. Thank you. So at the end of the quarter, they spent 13.5, but their allocation is 16.8. Therefore, we will have 16.8 minus 13.5. That tells you that almost 2 billion will be available in the final quarter. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Deputy Minister, the rest of the questions that are not answered will be answered in a written form.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We will definitely respond in writing on all the questions, including Arto and the thing that we have appealed the High Court judgment, and we will await the judgment of the Concord, because we believe that when it comes to constitutionality of any legislation, it is the Concord that will pronounce finally on that one. Until then, we continue with the work. Thank you, Chair.
Do pass our message of appreciation to the Ministry, Honorable Deputy Minister, for always taking us seriously when we want you to be here. That will also include the Minister. We want to thank you very much for the Samewerke, Sosele and Africa. Thank you very much.
Chairperson. Can you please give the department a date for the response, Chair?
We normally say within 7 days, Valerie. I thought that was an understanding, but let me then say within 7 days.
Chairperson,
can we start to try and really be not calling the chairperson I can see the hand is up, Honorable Mabena.
Oh, can I speak now?
Yeah, you can speak now.
No, thank you, Chair, for granting me the opportunity to speak. I think Valerie preempted me there. You know, we had municipalities, Abomsunduzi and still Cape Town and all of these municipalities a few weeks ago making a presentation to the portfolio committee. And a lot of our questions were not answered. They were told that they needed to respond in writing, unless if I missed it on my email. And if so, I do apologize, but I don't recall receiving anything from them. And we even impressed upon them that they needed to respond, I think it was within 3 working days, and they haven't. And it seems like people dodge accountability, especially when they're presenting before the portfolio committee on the basis that we have run out of time, therefore all responses will be done in writing. But I think from the portfolio committee side of things, there is no tracking mechanism which is there in place, which should advise members to say this entity and that entity or the department itself committed to respond in writing, and this is the deadline and this is the turnaround time. And I think perhaps maybe from the secretariat, we should start tracking and monitoring all of those things. And there should be a regular report that comes to the portfolio committee. If we say they need to do it within 7 days or 7 days, whatever the case may be, we need to get an update in terms of those responses that we receive, because we don't receive them. It seems like once it goes onto that issue that they'll respond in writing, then it's gone. It's done.
Honorable Mabena. Yeah, due to the interest of time, I agree with you. I agree with you fully. Valerie, let's track those responses, and if there are no responses, let's follow up. The honorable member is correct. Can we then move the legal advisor, Ms. Pumelele, is ready, and the advocate is ready. Advocate, a minute just to refresh us so that we can move.
Morning, Chairperson. You were muted for a little bit there, so I was almost lost frantically. But Chair, we are going to carry on from clause 7. I just want to close this Zoom slide. Let me share my screen. There we go. So Chair, we left off just before we could look at clause 7. Last week. Clause 7 in the new draft A list. Chair, if it's fine for me to carry on quickly in the interest of time. Clause 7 in the bill amends section 3I. 3I is the powers and duties of the traffic officer, just above my Word document here. So Chair, this is what the bill looks like. The amendment is going to be page 8, line 15. So we're going to add here. We are going to insert after applicable law. And the officer must deal with the impounded vehicle as determined in terms of the relevant sections of the Criminal Procedure Act. Members will recall that Ms. Swanepoel made a submission listing the specific sections, but the legal advisors did indicate that as our legislation does change from time to time, the better drafting style would be just to refer to it as the relevant sections of the Criminal Procedure Act. Chair, so that is the proposed amendment to the bill on the draft ALIS for Clause 7. Just to see members' view on this before we carry on.
I am looking at members' views and you're taking it for granted that we still agree that if there is no hand, members are happy. As a result, I don't see a hand. Can we continue, advocate?
Thank you, Chair. Clause 8 just gives a new title to the new proposed 3L, which is in the bill. So 3L, just to show members what the old one was. JKL, it was the approval of training center. Then the bill proposed to be training center to be registered. But the draft A-list after the deliberations proposed this to change to the registration of training center. So the content here in 3L remains the same. The proposal is just to amend the heading, Chair. That's clause 8. Then, Chair, for Clause 9, there's no new proposed amendments in the draft A-list based on the deliberations and the discussions members had when we looked at Clause 9. So I'm just quickly flagging. Let me just make the size a little bit bigger. Just showing Clause 9 here for members. It's an insertion of those new sections. So it's the application for registration of training center, grading, suspension, and cancellation of the training center. Then, Chair, getting to Clause 10, we'll look at the proposed amendments here per the draft A list. So that's page 9, line 21, this line we are at. So on page 9, line 21, after her. So that will be right here, to insert subject to compliance with the applicable traffic laws. Chair, this was one of the points that was raised based on the interactions received during the subcommittee's considerations into the public protector's report. This was the proposal from members to try and strengthen the need for the MIBs and the bodybuilders to ensure that when they do modify, build, or import these vehicles, that they do so with compliance to the applicable traffic laws before they can distribute or sell such vehicles. So if there's any new laws that do come in on the traffic laws regarding the safety requirements for the vehicles, let's say it's even the seatbelt regulations and such, when the SANS specifications for safety of the vehicles change, then it would fall under the applicable traffic laws, and that would allow us to have to make sure that our the counterparts under trade and industry, those entities that have to come and do the checks and investigations and inspections of these bodies, that they make sure that they comply with the applicable traffic rules. Chair, so since this one is a bit of a touchy one, I'm just going to pause for members' comments here on Clause 10, Chair.
Advocate, I have on the line Honorable Manu.
Chairman, good afternoon. Mine is I'm fine with that. Just that I wanted to request, I didn't want to interrupt the enlargement of that size of the view, especially on the left side of my screen. That would assist so that we could follow properly, if at all possible. Yeah, I think it is much better. Looks like, thank you, Advocate. But other than that, I think it does capture the sentiments we raised in the subcommittee. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Manu. Advocate, it is not all of us who are having side mirrors in our face. So yeah, he is right. I can see them now. Thank you very much. That's for Jahid.
Thank you, Chi. Then Chi, the next proposed amendment in the A list goes to clause 14, but I just want to remind members of the other clauses to make sure we didn't miss anything. So clause 11 inserts all these new sections regarding the blank number plates as well as the micro dots. So members will recall those discussions that were had there. So I'm just going to run through clause 11 on the screen just to refresh members there. It also touches on the new provisions regarding the Weybridge facilities. There's the micro dots. And then to clause 12, amended section 6 here regarding the appeal to the shareholders committee. So that's the bill. Also going to try and make that one a little bit bigger. So this one didn't have any further additions in the submissions. This would have affected this first subsection. So we added a bit more details there, also to add all the micro dots and the Weybridge facilities and the number plates. Then just to remind members of clause 13, this affects section 7. So it gives it a new heading and additional content as it was in the bill. There was also no major issues there. And then we get to clause 14. Clause 14, members will recall there was a discussion during the deliberations that there's a section in clause 8A or clause 15, that is a repetition of section 8. And in the deliberations, then members decided that we don't need the duplication and that one would be sufficient. So just to show that one for members, that's why we're saying that clause 14 regarding a change here to section 8 is rejected. The new proposal there is to repeal section 8 of the Principal Act. So just to show members, if we are repealing section 8, section 8 just says that you cannot operate the driving license testing center if it has not been registered and graded. There was a whole debate regarding the use of no person and why no person is there, and the department did indicate that even though the driving license testing centers aren't run by individuals, if we take into account, for example, the current arrangements that they have with RTMC, then that would have fallen under the no person side of things. but it's normally the provincial and municipal departments responsible for road and traffic laws that run these DLTCs. But you do get private individuals that run vehicle testing centers. That's a different aspect altogether. They do have to do the registration and grading as well. But members will see here that if you read A in the Act, and you read, I mean, if you read 8 and you read 8 capital A3, they are a repetition. So that is why the proposal is there to delete or repeal Section 8, and then we keep the new proposed clause 15, which amends 8 capital A. And then if we go to clause 15, members will see here again that it is covered, the section we're removing is covered here. So it will just take out the reference to no Department of State and no person, and just do it encompassing in this manner. So that would change to a provincial department responsible for transport or registering authority shall not operate a driving license testing center unless that center is registered and graded accordance to the Act. But members will see here there was additions to these proposals as well, so that we add or local authority. So it would be a provincial department responsible for transport, or it'll be or registering authority or local authority. So it'll add the municipalities by adding local authority. We had that discussion last week as well when we looked at those concerns that were raised in the submissions. So the new clause 15 inserts here in line 34. There's first we take out the provincial department responsible for transport, and then we substitute this with local authority. So this clause will then read, any local authority or registering authority desiring to operate a driving license testing center shall in the prescribed manner apply to the Inspectorate of Driving License Testing Centers for approval and the registration of such testing center. Then the next proposed amendment, again, yeah, that's the one I touched on here in line 40, after authority, so after the authority there, so it'll then read a provincial department responsible for transport or registering authority or local authority shall not operate a driving license testing center unless such testing center is registered and graded in accordance with this Act. And then if we go down here to line 51, it's again after the registering authority here, just to add the reference to or the local authority. And that is the clause 15. Sometimes reference to registering authorities and local authorities are interchangeably used in the transport legislation. But for the sake of ensuring that it is all areas covered, the drafters did propose that we add that, and that was also a consideration that we took from the submissions, Chair. Just checking if members are happy so that I can continue with the next clause.
Advocate, there is a hand from Honorable Lisa Kwamang. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. It's a minor one, Advocate. I see you reading some wording and clauses that are not on what is there. I'm not sure if that is a future anticipate. Like when you were adding local authority in some clauses, it was not. Okay. All right. I was reading the other side. Chair, I'm covered. It was just clarity. I'm covered. I'm fine. No issues. I move we accept, Chair. Thank you.
You are covered by Advocate. Thank you very much, Advocate. The member is covered. Thank you. Can you proceed?
Chair, I see there's another hand.
Okay. Honorable Onsinger.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the opportunity to also participate on this item. Chairperson, I am in agreement with the sections covered, and I propose that we proceed.
Advocate, you now know the hand was saying we must proceed.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Honorable Unsinga. Thank you.
Members will see here in the proposed draft A list, the next one where there's amendments proposed is clause 17. So I'm just going to fly clause 16 again for members. So this just outlines the process of the application for the registration and grading. There was no major concerns there for members. This is just that it has to be publicized and given notice of such registration in the Gazette. So then our next one is clause 17. And clause 17 amends section 11. Just see if I can do it this way. Okay, so it's the appointment of inspectorate of driving license testing centers. Get my document back. Here we go. So members will see here for clause 17, in line 16, after person to omit the comma and to insert or. So it will then read appoint a person or an authority or a body as an inspectorate of driving license testing centers. That's the proposal received there from the drafters. And then Chair, again in line 16, to omit or a body and to substitute this by removing that altogether. So it will then in total read, appoint a person or an authority as an inspectorate of driving license testing centers. If we take both of these amendments together, Chair, so then it'll be the removal of or a body. That is the proposal for clause 17 from the drafters. Chair, then going to clause 18. Clause 18 inserts section 11 capital A. So members will see here it is the omission of an organization is proposed in the draft A list. So then 11 capital A will read, an MEC shall appoint a person. So the MEC shall appoint a person as a provincial inspectorate to conduct inspections and evaluations to ensure compliance with this act. So, Chair, that is the proposal there for clause 18. Then going on to clause 19. Clause 19 amends section 13. It's the license to drive, either learner's or driving license. So members will see this is where the discussion was regarding the provisional driving license or the introduction of a provisional driving license. And if members recall during the deliberations, that was not supported. The submissions, there was quite a few submissions that also did not support the introduction of an additional license. And clause 20 and 19 are linked to each other because of that addition. So the amendments in clause 19 would have affected clause 20. So members will see here that is why the proposal in the draft A list is that clause 19 is rejected. So we will still have the application for a learner's license or a driving license. And they will be examined to do that. So it doesn't change what is currently in the bill, that the bill will remain, and the same for section 14 in the bill, that will also remain. If members are in agreement with what followed from the deliberations for clause 19 and 20 to be rejected.
Advocate, I don't see any hand.
Thank you,
can
Chair.
We forget it? Yes.
Chair, then clause 21, amend section 15, which is the disqualification from obtaining or holding a learner's or driving license. So members will see here's our bill that we worked on this side. And the draft A-list proposes a change here in line 5, where we are removing this reference to the provisional license. That would be substituted by the words driving permit. So the heading will read disqualification from obtaining or holding a learner's license, driving permit, or driving license. Then, Chair, the next amendment here is in line 31. And that's where we are removing the and, the end of the line. And we are going to the next proposal here. Here in line 37, so it's after 3, we add the and here, the back of the issued. And then we get subsection G inserted. So we will have the addition here by, or with the words G by the addition of the following subsection. So Chair, I think the drafters will just have to make sure that their line references are correct here. Because if we're adding the addition of a following subsection G, EFG, we need to have the subsection after that. I think the drafters can just indicate whether these line references are correct.
Are they in the House, Advocate, to do that? Drafters, Mepumelele?
Greetings, Captain. Indeed, we are here. I just want to quickly see on clause 21 if this was the change effected by the state law advisors, Chairperson, because it's supposed to add what we are adding as well, Chairperson, as well as the line numbering. But I think we must just correct it once we have checked what exactly we were adding to a person after the subsection that is already in the bill. Thank you.
Advocate. Advocate Nels.
Chief. Then I think the state law advisor, if she's here, might just need to indicate what will be added following G, because it's not in this copy of the document that I have. Just before we continue, Chair.
State law advisor is Ms. Harichere. Am I correct?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Just to clarify the reference to paragraph G, point 4, just before clause 22, it's referring to the inclusion of this new proposed paragraph, Chairperson, as paragraph G, but myself and the Parliamentary Law Advisor will just confirm this, but it's a reference to the insertion of new paragraph G. Thank you, Chairperson.
Advocate, does that clarify the matter or is it complicating it further?
No, Chair, I think we'll then be able to just get a response from them. I'll just make a note for clause 21 for the next meeting on this one, Chair, so that we don't delay going through the rest.
Okay.
Chair, then clause 22. As the Parliamentary Legal Advisor presented in her slides, this 22 was rejected because it was on the surrendering of licenses or reissuing of a different category of licenses. It really is an action on the system that gets done automatically. And there was a close-off date by when our drivers had to move from having their licenses in their green ID books to the card IDs or the card driving license. And the department did indicate during the discussions there that they recently had somebody that returned from overseas that wanted to request such a thing, which is why they added it in here. But the members did indicate because the closing date was there in the regulations by when this had to be done, there really shouldn't still be a clause here to say that they must be afforded the time to do it. But if we look at, let's just see what follows 15, the disqualification in the Act. There is no 15A in the disqualification of the Act, but those regulations that did indicate the time frame by when they had to change it will still be in place. So it is covered in those regulations too. So in the deliberations, there was a proposal then to reject this clause being inserted. Then, Chair, just to remind members of Clause 23 amends Section 16. And this is the failure to disclose disqualifications in respect of driving license, authorizing driving of motor vehicle prohibited. So if there's any disqualifications, for example, if you have to use spectacles or if you were in an accident and you need assisting tools in your vehicle that allows you to continue driving, all of those things have to come in your driver license. And then there was just the additions here that as soon as the disqualification becomes aware or within a period of 21 days after having become aware of the disqualification, submit the license in order for that to be changed, Chair. So, and then the bill also just adds what happens when the license is submitted. Then, Chair, there's a proposed amendment here to Clause 24 in the draft A list. So members will see here, it's page 15, line 12. It's this reference to in-person application. Chair, members will recall again the legal advisor did indicate in the presentation the proposal to remove the reference to in-person application is to ensure or allow for the continuation of online applications. That was the proposal there from the drafters. This was not discussed during the initial deliberations, but this does come from a practical need to then allow for the removal of reference to in-person applications. Chair, even if you do look at how it's being applied, you can send a proxy to apply for renewals, for example, or to pick up licenses. But that's if the person did submit to the eye testing and so forth. So this is, but this one in specifically refers to the registration or, to those concerns that may come up now with the online application. So I'm hoping that members are happy with that proposed removal. The other contents of the bill remains the same. Then Clause 25 doesn't have additional amendments, but just to show it to members, Chair,
just, the hand. Just a bit, I also see a hand, Honorable Mami.
Thank you, Chair. Could I request humbly that we go back to the issue of in-person and that the advocate was explaining now. My interest there is we have been seeing an Okay, maybe if through you, Chair, I could ask Advocate. I want to bring it in context with what we see happening in Gauteng, where driving schools are causing havoc about them not being able to do this themselves. We don't know the real reasons objecting to this electronic way of putting in appointments. I don't know if you can comment on that, Advocate, through you, Chair, as to this proposed amendment, given what is happening, what does it say, and how do we address it? And I'm not advocating for driving schools to do appointments. Chair, through you, that is what I would like us to just be sure of there, if possible, to Advocate, just repeating those proposed amendments.
Thank you. Advocate?
Chair, if my memory is correct, in the submissions that we did get from the driving schools, they did indicate that it wasn't necessarily regarding this specific amendment, because if we look at the bill always had the requirement for in-person applications in order to issue a learner's license, because that's the heading. This one is specifically about the learner license application. And everybody has to go and write the test. But I think the concerns that the driving schools indicated was to make the appointments, because in the past, some of the driving schools had the arrangements to go and make appointments on behalf of learners at the driving testing centers. Now, I'm not sure if they charged a fee for these or if it was included in their driving school fee, or exactly what the protest memorandum currently might state. The department might shed some light on that, Chair. But in my view, the in-person applications was just to make sure that the identity of the person applying is secure, that you know it's actually that person that is applying, and that person who will then come and write the test. If I have to look at it from my side, it would be more important for me that it is the actual person who is awarded the license that writes the test. And there has in the past been some issues with people that come in with fake IDs under other people's names and writing tests. But this is not going to, having it in person there has always been there in the Act. It hasn't really changed. If people want to find a way, they'll find a way. But Chair, I think the in-person application is just that you now don't physically anymore, with the evolution of technology, you don't have to go and stand in a queue at the center to make your appointments to apply for this. That is what technology is allowing us some leeway. There are some concerns where people apply. One of the most recent articles I've read, and that could be covered by a programming or system correction, where some learners have applied online and then they give them a time of midnight on a Saturday to go and write their learner's test. Now, that's obviously not possible. So that is a programming error in the system. I think it would assist in terms of technology moving us forward if we do remove the in-person application, but we must just make sure that when it comes to the actual writing and qualification for your learners or your drivers, that is still suitably covered in the legislation, that it's not somebody that's coming to try and do it on your behalf, but that the ID, the fingerprints, and the eye test and all those things will be applicable to that person that is applying. Chair, that's just, I hope that assists the member.
Advocate, I think that assists us in terms of helping Honorable Member Manu. Honorable Manu.
Chair, I accidentally muted Mr. Mung when I was trying to mute Mr. May. My apologies.
Okay. You apologize to me, not to the chair. And your apologies are accepted. But all I wanted to say, Advocate, if I may repeat through you, Chair, that so in essence, am I correct in saying the removal of in person will also reinforce the department's action in terms of online applications? Because if you live in person there, it then opens a back window for that application. Having said that, but I think that explanation does assist or does reconfirming, and I don't have qualms. I am in support or move for the support of the committee in that regard. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mangu. Advocate, that was clause number 20.
She is 24.
May I humbly request that we hold our horses there on clause 24, if you allow me, Advocate, and we shall continue. And thank you very much. At the legal expert on parliamentary advisor and the state law advisor owes us an explanation on clause 21. Am I correct, Advocate?
Yes, Chair. They just need to get back to the members on clause 21. What will follow that new insertion, G?
Thank you very much. Would I be correct that they will be ready to do that by next week, Pumelele?
You are very correct, Chairperson. We will definitely be ready and able to do so. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much. Let's then allow you to go and do some bit of work there. I now want to deal with item number 4 on the agenda. A report back by the subcommittee on the Public Protector's report on a systematic investigation into the illegal conversion of goods carrying Toyota Quantum panel vans into passenger carrying minibus taxis to transport members of the public on the extension of its scope of work and program. Valerie, my understanding of this report back is that the long and short of the report back is that the committee seeks an approval to extend its scope of work and continue interviewing people that are left and companies that are left behind still. Am I capturing the essence of the report?
Yes, Chair, because in terms of process, the committee originally approved the terms of reference and the subcommittee now has to come back to get approval for the extended scope change. Sorry, Chair, for my phone, it's been ringing off the phone this morning. So that is the crux of the chair.
Honorable members, can we approve that? That the Honorable Manu and the members participating there should continue their work and come back when they are done. I am waiting for hands. And I can see members do not want to raise their hands. I don't know why.
Honorable Mapena, followed by Honorable Miriam Ramadwa and Honorable Lawrence McDonald.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm supporting.
You are supporting, thank you. Babu Mapena.
Chair, I think my hand was also supporting.
Thank you very much, Mshonisho. Thank you very much. The head was supporting. Honorable McDonald.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was also just supporting. I think it's a very important subcommittee, and I was supporting the subcommittee's request. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are you not part of the subcommittee? Let's take the next item in my agenda. The next item in my agenda is the agenda that seeks to deal with the consideration and adoption of minutes of proceedings of the meeting which was held on the 1st of March. I'm sure members have gone through the minutes. I've done so myself. And I am also opening the floor for adoption of the minutes. Let me see hands. Baba Lisa Gamani.
Thank you, Chair. I move for adoption of the minutes as a true reflection.
Any seconder?
Seconding, Chair.
I'm raising my hand to second the minutes.
Yeah, you want to
propose by Honorable Mang.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, I think we are arriving at the end of the meeting. I just want to indicate that our program is becoming bumper to bumper, because we are adding items as we work as this committee. So we should be, in a way, be prepared that we'll not get enough time to deal with all the matters that comes before us. But it is also correct, Valerie, that where we seek, where we take a decision that there should be reports that are coming to us, those reports should be forthcoming. Please assist us on that. Otherwise, I think let me thank all the members that are with the committee through thick and thin. There will be times where the attentions amongst ourselves, because of the issues on the table, we should accept that. There will be time when this committee will be sailing smoothly. We should also enjoy that. Otherwise, I think the committee has been doing very well. Let me take this opportunity to thank you and close the meeting. Long live everybody, long live.
Long live the chair, long live.
Best wishes. Thank you, colleagues. See you later.
Thank you. All right, colleagues.
Thank you.